Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee, and this is the E3 Aftermath Show, joined by Jeff 30K Kanata.
That's Kanata with two N's and one T, of course.
And 30K followers now. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, thanks, everybody who listens to the show that's following me. I appreciate it.
Andrea Jingle Jangle Renee.
I know, my bracelets. Hey, everybody. How's it going? Glad to be back.
And Zav, who just managed to nickname himself immediately preceding these proceedings. That would be... Zav, I'm accustomed to disappointment, D'Amatos.
I love how the words just roll off your tongue.
Sorry, brother. I mean, hey, would it have been better if it had been the Leafs that had taken that bloody nose from the Bruins?
You know what? If the Leafs got that far in the playoffs, I would have already been too pleased with myself. That sounded wrong. Can we start recording again now? I'm good. Hey, before we start, I just want to say...
We already did start.
All right. Well, before we start the actual show, I just want to say hello to Jack Mertens and Natasha Patriarca, a couple of listeners of the show. I told them I'd say hello.
Thanks for listening.
Shoutouts. They gave me money, so it's cool. Yeah.
Wow. Maybe we should start
Open that up.
We should start doing shoutouts
like
for money.
Idea.
I like
hey,
this idea.
PayPal.
Yes, it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing.
We can undercut each other. Garnet will give you a shout out for a dollar, but I'm going to go 50 cents.
No, dude, I'm
50 cents.
I'm right there. I'm on the dollar floor.
Speaking of which, shout out to 50 cents.
Huge listener. Huge listener. Man, we can confirm. Vitamin water and we can confirm is two
like,
passions.
Talk about blood on the sand again, please. And in continuing tradition, I'd just like to also compliment the Dallas Mavericks for bringing home the championship.
And yeah, sure so that, where's that Heat in five prediction now, guys?
Exactly. That's what I was saying. It's like that really worked out. And you know, and congratulations to Dirk, who I think now really cements his position as one of the legendary players of the game from this era. So there you go.
Doing it all with a cough, too. Amazing.
Yeah, and a fever, and he was on his deathbed, and you know, those things get kind of blown up. Obviously, he was not doing too bad. The dude played out of his shoes. It was amazing. All right, so here's what we got going on today. We're just going to talk about some games. We got E3 stuff to catch up on. If you follow my Twitter, you know I already promised that we'd do I'd catch up the racing games. But we've got a whole lot of other games here to catch up on. We've also got some things we've been playing. We got a little bit of your feedback from our E3 coverage. We got some news. There's some Duke Nukem something game that came out I heard about that
what?
People have been playing. I don't know. You guys heard of this thing?
You know, we talked about that familiar. The very first time I was on Weekend Confirmed. Do you remember
wow.
that?
You were just like
a
I was just gonna say yes.
You beat me to it.
I saw it formulating.
Audrey looked up. She's like, it was amazing. Little did we know, 14 years later, it would still be that immature. Just like the show. Just like this show. 14 years later, it will be just as anachronistic. And people are like, fucking people listen to no one listens to that shit anymore. All right, so. Well, hell, now we talked about it. Why don't we just start
right
off with Duke Nukem Forever, which has finally arrived on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC. How odd to even introduce it with consoles first, but that's pretty much the way 2K set it up.
Whenever it comes in my direction and looks at me.
Because you and I have had this conversation, and we've been having it on Shaq News as well, that it was really odd that after all that time, instead of saying, hey, it's Duke Nukem Forever, it's a PC game, they were very much promoting, hey, it's the console game.
I think it's weird because if you listen to this show, you're probably part of one of three groups, which is NeoGAF has a big following for this show. There is your Weekend Confirmed listeners that comment
and
on
the people
the
that are trapped under something.
Yes. And
are all the people at our orthodontist's office in Indiana, right?
Right. Yes.
They're like, Todd, take this thing off my ears.
And also, you know, Shackers. In general. And the thing with Shaq News and Duke Nukem Forever is there's a huge history with that franchise and that game. Of course, the person who started Shaq News, Steve Gibson, now works as the PR manager for Gearbox, who brought out Duke Nukem Forever. So there's a big history with that game at Shaq News. So it's a little weird having to do that review. We had Steve Watts do it for us at Shaq News. So the problem with the game is that if you had expectations for it, you either really loved the game because you thought it was this really old school throwback, or you didn't like it because it just seemed janky.
Yes. Well, what is Duke Nukem other than expectations? That's all the franchise is at this point.
Well,
that's
true. I went into playing Duke Nukem Forever without any expectations except that it was going to be completely misogynistic, which it was. But that's Duke Nukem, so even though it's not a game for me, like, you go in knowing that that's the way it's going to be. But as far as that gameplay and mechanics, you know,
and how
I was,
does that make you feel?
Well, let me tell you, that opening scene made me want to turn it off right away.
Really? That's actually,
I haven't played it. So what's the opening scene? So you don't have to go into graphic detail, but
describe the opening scene, and then I actually want to hear, like, more than just that made me want to turn it off. I actually want to know, like, what your response. I hadn't actually thought about it. We have a girl to, like, ask about. This is really interesting to me now. Suddenly I'm interested.
I thought
more
you called
than
her a girl.
I am a woman, Garnet.
So what's
the there was a silence. Oh, that's sad for me.
We were waiting to hear you.
I was just making sure that I didn't say something wholly inappropriate.
Okay,
because
thanks.
there was like there were like bubbles of word clouds all over the top of my head.
Yeah, I could see them from over here.
So the opening scene is basically like Duke is sitting in a chair watching action on a TV. I mean, you're in the action, and then it pulls back and you see like him sitting in the chair, like, from first person perspective. And one girl lifts her head and, like, wipes her mouth. The other girl lifts her head, like, clearly.
Okay, that's all I needed to know.
Yeah,
okay.
I was like, awesome. So why am I playing this? Oh, yeah, because I have to play to be able to talk about it with my peers.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would never.
You're very mature peers.
I never would have touched that game in a million years as a woman, as a female gamer.
Well, to
or
be
just
fair,
a woman in
not
general.
Really made for you.
No, it's not. Absolutely. Yeah.
But wait.
Isn't.
Why not made for her? Because it's a game.
Did you
that's
hear the part
shooter
that she just
fans.
Described?
Right. But that part. So do you ignore movies that have misogynist overtones with the way that they have women in them?
No. And what's really interesting about you bringing that up is that I actually, like, I play Grand Theft Auto. I really like the game. Obviously, they degrade women in that, you know, game as well. I think it was just so, Duke is just so in your face about it. And but that's part of the Duke Nukem franchise, you know, is that he's this over the top, like, super macho guy. And it's not something that I find personally very appealing as an educated woman. I'm not saying other girls out there that like to play games don't like it or shouldn't like it, because it's totally just my personal opinion. I want to make that very clear. I don't want girl gamers to come back to me and be like, I thought Duke Nukem was fucking awesome. You know what I mean? Because that's great for them. But I just, like, every step of the way, there's no redeeming female character in that game at all.
At least in the opening scene, it wasn't like one of those deals where you had to keep tapping X.
Oh, yes, I guess that's a bonus.
See,
I think
even
what?
Even the
because
narrative.
They're always trying to get you into. But think about it. Like, I said that jokingly, but at the same time, the reason that I think that was, I've thought about this a little bit. One of the reasons I think that the Duke image comes off like offending, especially females, but just in general, is a little more over the edge, is that they're constantly not trying to cast it as you're watching a character in a game, but you are Duke. You're the badass. You are, you know, completely projected into that character.
Exactly, and that's why I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But is the, I mean, this is all stuff we knew, right? Is the, I, yeah. The impression that I got is that over and above all of that, it's also crap.
Oh, yes. No, most certainly. Story aside, like, the creative, like, content behind it, I thought the mechanics were bad. I just thought it wasn't a fun gameplay experience. Like a lot of reviewers out there, I thought it was very monotonous. I thought the graphics looked terrible, especially just coming from E3 and seeing right. So many amazing looking games.
The impression that I got, because our review was based on the 360 version, is that people were like, "We'll play it on PC and it, you don't have frame rate issues and the game looks better." It doesn't look all that better to me. I mean, my PC is pretty good, and I played it on PC, and it still looks like crap. I think that there's a lot of missed opportunities with that game. The thing that bothers me about it the most is that you get this impression where it starts off with him playing a game of himself. And then it kind of goes into the actual Duke Nukem Forever. And the thing that I thought was funny is they keep mentioning, like, it's been 12 years since he's been on another adventure and all this other stuff. And he's still thought of as this badass. And I thought that the game would have been so much more interesting if they did, like, the Ghostbusters 2 approach. Remember Ghostbusters 2 where,
yeah.
You know, the first movie ends and everyone loves them.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters 2, they're doing kids' they're parties.
Having thrown a party
no
for
one,
a bunch of children
right.
All the while the slime is under the building. Yeah,
yeah,
I got it.
Bobby Brown then sings one of his masterful hits. So I thought that it would have been way more interesting if Duke still considered himself a king And everyone else wasn't in on that joke, and everyone else acted like, well, why is this guy acting like this?
But and you can't make Duke into Krusty the Clown.
But no.
See, I agree.
But this is no. But what I'm saying is,
could be meta
build him into that character again. You start off with it being it's been 12 years since he's been important, so people don't consider him important. And then throughout the course of the game, he saves the world and becomes that character once more.
Isn't that what Max Hazard was?
Matt Hazard, yeah.
Matt
Hazard was, but the difference between Matt Hazard and this game is that everyone was in on that joke, whereas this game takes itself super seriously. It is a joke, but everyone takes themselves really, really seriously in terms of the storyline. And I was thinking, maybe this game is like Deadly Premonition, because there are people who love this game, especially in our community, who think that I read
really?
one person,
not just being ironic and contrarian.
No, one person in our comments said that they thought it was the best first person shooter experience they've had in years.
That smacks of I love my band and I'm being contrarian because everyone else hates it.
Yeah, you know what? And that's what I was saying. Like it, I usually divorce, and for this game, I divorce my expectations of what a game should be or what it should include. I just didn't think at its very fundamental core level it was entertaining at all. I didn't think it was entertaining. I thought it was boring. I thought some of it was even a little lazy. Like there's a part where you drive a little RC car through the level and then something happens and then you become big again and then walk back through that level that you just drove through. Like what was the point of that?
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense. And it's you could sort of see where things break apart where it's like, this is where the industry included, like, I think Giant Bomb was talking about this, where, you know, there's jump pads in this game. It's like, oh, this is where, you know, this year you could kind of tell where the design document starts and finishes between levels and how things are added to the game. I think that they could have went a step further to really talk about how the game has been developed for a long time. I would have loved if in the middle of this game, and I haven't finished it, and I don't think that this actually happens, but if you start a level and it looks like Quake 2, it's that old engine, to sort of give a little jab at like, yeah, this game has been around in development for so long, but it masks itself as this $60 worth it based on modern shooters game, and I don't think it's that at all.
No, I absolutely agree.
Garnet, you and I had a disagreement a while back.
Well, I still have a disagreement that I have like a suspended penalty or whatever they call that in hockey that I'm just waiting for my moment to deliver. What is it called?
You got to stop doing that because you're not getting it right at all.
What is it called?
Touchdown?
I have no idea what you're
talking about.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
Where the referee has called a penalty, but he lets play continue until the puck turns over to the other team and then enforces the penalty?
Yep, touchdown.
Yeah.
It's not touchdown. I
don't know what you're talking about. I honestly...
You're not the hugest hockey fan either.
I don't know what you mean.
They're going to revoke your Canadian card.
Anyway, so
my suspended... like the penalty that I had here waiting was that I disagree with your indictment of folks who say that they like it as being like, I love my band or being marketing driven because...
No, I don't want to... I don't mean to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Maybe there are some people that... I think is the best shooter I've played in however many years smacks of...
You know
that,
what?
You know?
We do that on a lot of games, though. There's any number of games that you get in the moment of it and you get excited about it and you're enjoying it. And that's fucking awesome. That's one of the reasons we play games, is to have that excitement and be like, man, that was the best game I've ever played. And it wasn't really the best game you ever played. But at the moment, you're like, wow, I'm really enjoying this. This is great. And I think that for the people who really were building up for Duke to go in and have that old school experience, it fits. And I think that there is an audience for which it fits. I agree with most of the criticisms in that it shouldn't have been a $60 game at this point.
Right.
I mean, I understand that it's been under development for forever and there's a lot invested in it. But at the same time, it's been under development for a long time and you're no longer at anywhere remotely near where modern engine and modern game design are in 2011.
Right.
So it's just not a AAA caliber production piece, which puts it at a huge disadvantage to the larger scale audience of people who just go out and pick it up.
Well,
to your point, though. So that was my saying. I still think there are people who legitimately sit down and have a great time with it.
Sure. And believe me, I'm in favor of that. If you can have fun playing whatever, I don't care if I hate it. And honestly, I don't have an opinion on this because I haven't played it.
Right.
But whatever it is that I hate, if you have a great time playing it, more power to you.
There you go.
It's all about having a good time. That's across the board. But
that's what reviews are in general. And the thing that bothers – also, you were talking about delayed penalties is what I think you were
referring to. Delayed penalties, yeah.
The thing that bothers me about this is like if you read comments on other people's reviews or if you read the comments on our reviews, it seems like this disconnect of, oh, you don't get it, or you know, you don't realize that this game is supposed to be X, Y, and Z. And it's like, you know what? the game, to me and to a lot of critics out there, they don't agree that the game is quality. It's not a quality product. It just seems right. like a mishmash of stuff that they've thrown together. And to be fair, what did you expect? I mean, I don't really get the venomous tone, I guess. Some of people are really attacking it. I don't mean to specifically say that any reviews I've read have done this, but there are certain people in like comment threads that are like, it is the worst thing I've ever seen. It is an abortion of a game, things like that. I don't really agree with that. To me, it wasn't entertaining. And it has nothing to do with expectation. It's just not a good game.
We also have to look at it like in the canon of Duke Nukem games. Like, who is Duke Nukem in this game versus who he was even in Duke Nukem 3D? I mean, he just doesn't feel as badass as he used to be. I mean, you get to carry two guns, and none of the guns in the game are really even that awesome. They're just like, okay, you have a pistol and a shotgun.
They're the classic Duke Nukem arsenal. They're the games. Yeah, they're the guns you're supposed to have as Duke.
I know, but you would think they would update them maybe a little bit. How many years it's been? 2011, maybe he gets some cool.
I don't see many updated guns in any of the Call of Duty games, Modern Warfare games. They're always the same damn guns. At least his guns are unique.
Real weapons, you know. Well, and these guns, you can make fake ones.
Well, so because they can make fake ones, they should just throw away the ones that they had that people love.
Well, if they're not going to change that, why did they make it regenerating health? Why did they make him only be able to carry two guns at once? I mean, they're obviously modernizing
it's a console game.
Right. Okay. Whatever. You know, Serious Sam is a console game. You can carry a million games in that. Half-Life 2 is a console game. I don't see you only being able to carry two weapons in that game. Like, that is a bullshit argument. The thing with this game is that it's sort of like it is designed by committee over many, many years of like, oh, games have this now. Let's add that. You know what I mean? It's all these elements being thrown into a pot and hoping that it's going to turn into something quality. And it's just not good. I'm like tired of even talking about this game because
the most interesting point for me. I mean, we kind of knew that the goal was to get it out, right?
Yes.
And you and I had a disagreement about how this could be setting up for an actual Duke Nukem game.
Yes. You don't think it is?
I think this is going to be a failure, and I think it's going to kill any idea of that. And that's what I thought back then too. I'm not rooting for that to happen. I would love for Gearbox to come out with the Duke Nukem game they really want to make, if that exists. But I don't see anything in this game or in the reaction to this game that delivers promise for some sort of phoenix rising from the ashes.
I don't think you were supposed to see promise, but I think that it was a sort of responsibility that was felt to finish this project and put it to bed and then move forward. And I think if anything, the negative reaction will simply energize those folks to make a, you know, to make a Duke game for the modern era that lives up to the perceived reputation of what.
Can you imagine what that would be?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. Yeah. It's a game that is fun and over the top, and so it's sort of what I came away from Saints Row being excited about, maybe?
Andrew Dice Clay, not funny anymore, right? But
don't tell him that. He doesn't know.
But that doesn't mean that there aren't cutting, funny, contemporary comedians. What's his name? Dimitri...
Martin.
Yeah.
Nothing like...
But what? Exactly, nothing like. But still funny, right? Still has an edge.
Yeah, still humor still exists, yes.
But I mean...
I don't understand where you're going.
I'm saying that while the old shtick might not work, that you just have to like comedy in that era was very like raw and in your face. Comedy in this era has changed some, and so they need to figure out how to evolve that Duke persona in a similar way to find a modern era version that works.
Yeah, I mean, I think
he can still be Duke. He could still be you could still have stand-up comedy. It's just not the same.
I think what Zav was talking about would be a wonderful thing to do with this character. Make it meta, make it ironic, make it self-conscious.
Right.
You know,
I don't know about that.
Recognize that he is anachronistic and the world around him has changed. Basically make the video game version of, go with me on this, the Brady Bunch movie. Remember how I thought that was a brilliant way to handle that property when that came out. They have Brady Bunch is this weird anachronistic thing and throw them into modern time.
All right, we're moving on. We've gotten now to the Brady Bunch movie reference of the show.
I think it was a very
I'm with you here, Jeff.
Thank you.
I think that could work.
I think it would have been a good way to reintroduce that character to a new generation. Instead of everyone assuming that he's badass, let him build up in the story to get to that point where everyone's like, okay, this is why I like this character.
And who plays
potential for the future.
Who plays Duke in this TV movie adaptation you've got going on in here?
Arnold Schwarzenegger, duh.
McBain?
There's a whole many levels to that.
All right, so another retro moved forward game also came out this week, which was Child of Eden. Mm-hmm. We've all played Child of Eden, and it's a whole other sort of approach to what's old is new, because it has very many trappings and underlying feelings from Rez that we see in there. However, it is completely modernized, in fact, embracing Kinect as one of its control mechanisms.
My arm still hurts.
From what? From
connecting.
From throwing fire at the...
Oh, see, it's sore. Even doing the motion makes it sore.
Kinect elbow.
Yes.
Kinect elbow.
One of the things that I was most surprised about, and maybe this is just because I haven't turned on my Kinect in a while, but I turned on my Kinect, didn't move my coffee table out of the way, was sitting down on my couch, and it worked great. Mm-hmm. Everything worked.
Really? I had so many problems getting it to configure. I had to rearrange my whole living room.
I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to move my coffee table all the way. I'm just going to turn it on.
So as long as you're talking about that, one thing that people have pointed out to me, because I said something about Kinect not working in the dark, is that Kinect obviously does work in the dark because it uses infrared sensing. What it can't do is it can't do the facial recognition part unless it can see your face.
Child of Eden even says, please turn the lights on while you play this because it'll work better.
Yeah, so it'll probably work better, but it does work in the dark to a degree. Someone sent me a video of like dudes using like the Modern Warfare nighttime vision goggles, and you can see like the grid of the lines that come out from the Kinect sensor. But I think the problem was that some of the G-Wiz early games were using the auto login, so if it couldn't see your face, it couldn't auto log you in. If it couldn't auto log you in, then it didn't want to let you play.
No, but you could just log yourself in and keep going from there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it does work in the dark. It's just different. So there you go. Copped to that problem. So Kinect and Child or controller.
I had a blast. I played both.
Which one do you like better?
They're completely different experiences.
Yes.
And I think both have their enjoyment value. I've never felt more like a superhero than when I was playing Child of Eden with Kinect. You know, just coming off seeing all these superhero movies, and here I am like putting my hands out and guiding the lasers to their targets. That is an awesome, fun experience. That
it sort of looks like you were doing the Emperor there.
Yeah, that's how you are. You're, you know, join me, whatever.
And mine was a little more like this.
That looks like you're groping someone.
I thought she was
doing... arrested in many states for that.
I thought she was doing cats.
I didn't really get into the both hands at the same time.
Well, you
I
can't
did
really,
one but... and then one.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, yeah. But, so my little three-act play that I just was inaccurate, I will agree. But you do feel that. And then switching back and forth is awesome. And the game is gorgeous, man.
Yes.
And what I love about this game, too, is that each level is, I think, completely different and better than the last one. It's like it gets more beautiful as you play it. I find that as I start a new level, I'm like, oh, man, this one's even better.
Which is sort of the point of the story of the game, too. The game's it's progressively getting more beautiful and more and cleaner for this character who's trapped within this world. One thing that I thought when you're playing with a controller versus playing with Kinect, you're playing with a controller and it's a great game. Whereas when you play with Kinect, it's an experience. It doesn't feel like a game. It feels like you're in this world and you're controlling these things with your movements. Whereas when you're playing with a controller, it's like Rez. You know what I mean? You're controlling this thing on the screen and everything still looks great and everything sounds great, but it's a completely different experience. And I think Kinect really brings out the fact that what I think Miz has been trying to do for a long time, which is getting people to feel that they're inside of this environment, they're inside of this world, and have a connection with the music and the game and the world, and sort of have this thing where they don't feel like they're playing with something, that they're living something out. And I think that's what this game does really, really well with Kinect.
It's very challenging. I mean, this is a hard game. I think it's harder than Rez ever was. Mm-hmm. I found myself at a certain point going, I just need to pick up the controller because I can't get past this. And with the controller, I like how the reticle, and you mentioned this previously, the reticle changes when you use the controller to make it more specific to that device. And, you know, it's a little easier to get to things with your hands than it would be with a controller. But either way, it's a very challenging game. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find that to be the case with Rez. Rez is like, how can I get a better score? And one of the things about this game is that it starts defaulting to having your score not displayed, which is I found to be a bummer. I went to the options right away and displayed my score because it's all about getting awesome multipliers and,
right.
and knowing
right,
well, how much
you're
scoring.
If you don't get enough stars, you don't get to advance to the next world. You have to go back and play again, which isn't a bad thing because it's
star count,
so beautiful. But
the star count varies based on which controller mechanism you're using.
Right.
Yeah, it scores you differently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's more lenient when you're playing with a Kinect device because I obviously with the controller, it presumes that you're going to be super accurate and go for a high score run.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to hear different people talk about it. For me, replaying Rez was always about just like jamming to the music.
Mm-hmm.
And Child of Eden is just the same thing to me. It's
yeah.
like,
I found myself,
I'm just going yeah. there. I'm just going there to jam and just play with it. And it's, you know, it's a sort of experience that almost comes into like, it's a more structured game experience, but somewhat like what we saw Bion doing with Lifelike. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know, you're just in the mood. But there, it's like there you're creating music and here the music has been created for you. So they're like, that's not exactly the same, really, because, yeah, they're not actually the same. All right.
I did find myself having the most fun when I was getting into the groove.
But you're into
like,
it, yeah.
Shooting off in the beat and like kind of moving my body in a more of a rhythmic fashion rather than just playing a game. That's when I started doing better.
Yeah, it's weird. It's fun with the controller and it's... You know, it's a very evocative of Rez sequel, but man, when you're playing with a Kinect, you're just like, I don't know, I can totally trance out to it. And I love the Genki Rockets music. I mean, I love that. I think that fits very, very well.
I would say that this is a really good stepping stone for people who want to get in on what's coming for Kinect later this year, next year, with all the games that we saw for Kinect at E3. Mm-hmm. This is a really good excuse to go out and buy Kinect if you don't already have one.
I mean, like Rise of Nightmares?
Which time?
No, I
Rise
mean,
of Nightmares is all the nightmares you're going to have of
no, I mean,
having
like,
to play that game.
I mean, like Mass Effect 3 and, you know, a bunch of other games that they announced, like Ghost Recon and other stuff. Star Wars.
Gunstringer.
Well, as long as we're
Disneyland
on that subject.
Disneyland Family Adventures.
What did you guys think of the incorporation of a Kinect as a way to build a gun? And is that like a big deal to anyone? I'm looking at that, I'm like, okay. So I can hold my hands open
well,
and blow the... I mean... I hate sounding totally cynical, but at the same time, I'm like, this is just doesn't matter to me.
But have you ever been fascinated by weapons? Have you ever actually like taken a gun apart or put it back together?
Wow, you're into it, huh?
No, I'm serious because
I'm
I've talked
flashbacks
to some people about
of
this.
Having flashbacks of this old Saturday Night Live where Dan Aykroyd's describing working on a transmission in a car. Like he's on like a go look it up. He's on like a helpline. There's like this guy who's like claiming to be like. Sexually overstimulated, and he's like, what I like to do is take apart a transmission. Anyway, no, who likes to take?
Which is exactly what Kinect's
no,
like.
But what I'm saying is I've talked to people who really got excited about the gunsmith feature.
Really?
Because
yeah,
they are actual shooters in real life that handle real weapons. And the idea of being able to mod a weapon like you would if you were actually putting the pieces on physically is kind of exciting.
Well, I mean, look at a game like, you know, Modern Warfare. You buy these attachments and you put it on top of your weapon and it changes the way your weapon looks like. But I mean, this is you could blow the gun apart and look at every intricate piece of it and it adds a little bit to that customization. Like you could randomize the weapon and just create something completely different.
It did look like Tony Stark's computer. It did look like Tony Stark's lab.
Right, right,
like,
right.
Vroom, vroom, vroom.
I mean, it's a cool addition. It's not, I mean, you're not going to be able to play the actual game using that mode.
You can, well, right, but you can test out a gun.
You could test out the gun, which, I mean, you could pretend like your hand
with
is
jazz hands
or some shit.
Jazz hands. Jazz hands are the new triggers. Jazz hands.
But well, people aren't going to use that mechanic to actually, like, go through the campaign or the multiplayer. Like,
right, but I mean, like,
it's not going
to
happen.
What else could they have added to this game to make it, to make Kinect worthy? I mean, Mass Effect is voice control, but you can do voice control with a headset. It's not a big deal.
Yes.
However... It is an additional function. It's additional functionality for this device that you may own that I think is utilizing something that is probably in some people's living rooms. I mean, this is a device that sold, 8 million units?
And I think it's over 10 now.
I think I'm assuming that a couple of hardcore people own it. Having the ability to just tell, you know, Garrus, concussive grenade or some shit, that's something that's cool. You know what I mean?
It is.
That's why it's better with Kinect.
It works.
That's why the logo
and
is that
let's
way.
Let's not go crazy. I mean, it's still
it's baby, like,
it's
baby
it's yelling at your television.
I'd like to thank the Kinect marketing team for joining us today on Weekend Confirmed.
Oh, you stop it.
Well, somebody's got to fight the cynical pants over here.
Exactly.
I think that it's baby steps forward. It shows developers experimenting with this technology. And I don't think we've found the sweet spot quite yet. And but I love the idea of trying things and seeing, does that add to the experience? Does it not? I mean, we just got off talking about Child of Eden. I think that added to the experience for me. So there are going to be applications for this.
Hey, with a thing that has 10 million units sold, they could have said, let's not add any of this stuff. And they actually went ahead and tried to add some hardcore functionality. I think that's something that's interesting.
Well, there's obviously a lot of room to play with it. One of the places is in Forza 4, which when we get back on the other side of the break, we will talk about that and F1 and all sorts of things still related to E3. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Week in Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
She had to get that little giggle in there, too. It's like, I'm putting the Splenda in my coffee. Screw you, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Wow, people are like, what?
Yeah. Hey,
anywho.
Sweet Spot's definitely coming up in the music break, where we have some excellent soulful progressive house, DJ Andy Reid and 44th and Filth helping us out again with a joint called Doin' from Yug featuring Sojay. Can't wait to hear that. Actually, Andy's going to be down here in July, guesting on the show.
Awesome.
Andy's going to be playing over in Hollywood, and we're all going. You don't know. You didn't know you're going yet, but we're
I
all
didn't.
Going. We're all going.
I can't wait.
I'm subjecting you all to house music.
You don't have to subject. I will go willingly. I love house music.
You'll be subjecting me.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. I got to see Pete Tong Sunday, so yeah. At
thanks for the invite. Jeez.
Encore Beach Party in Vegas. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. So, do people really want to walk around cars virtually with their Kinect and look at them? I don't know about this. This is, of course, Forza 4. One of the signature elements is its new... hold on, I wrote down the name of this in my notes. But it's like, I forget what they're calling it. But basically, it's the same idea that Gran Turismo got to, where you have these super high polygon count cars. They're gorgeous to look at. I mean, at least...
I hope they're calling it Carnect. That's my personal hope.
Carnect. That really, that's what you... Dude, that's awful. Come on.
It was kind of awesome, though.
They're calling it... I'm sorry. No, they're calling it the Auto Vista feature. Oh. The Auto Vista features. Right. These car models approach a million polygons. A million polygons. It's ridiculous.
That game... I'm not even a huge driving game fan, and I could not walk by that game without going, I have to play this. It is beautiful.
So before we get into that, because it is beautiful, let's finish out the Auto Vista thing. They've also, now they have a great collaboration with Top Gear, much as Gran Turismo 5 had. Part of that is that Jeremy Clarkson, who's the probably the most well-known of the three hosts, does a voiceover read for these cars that are in the Auto Vista feature. Now, they wouldn't say how many are in Auto Vista. I'm going to guess it's going to be a couple dozen max. I mean, you're talking million poly models.
It's like the
ridiculous amounts of work that goes just into the art resources. And they were hedging their bets. Not only would they not say how many, they wouldn't even give me a ballpark, but they did say that they would only be doing cars that had monumental significance in the spectrum of the auto enthusiast world.
So you're like DeLoreans, you're Volkswagen Beetles.
It's like the distinction in GT of like, well, these are supercars and these are ultra cars.
But in their defense, GT did a significant number of, at least a reasonably significant number of cars in that model. I'm thinking that Forza is going to be a really low threshold for Auto Vista. But that having been said, all you walk around the car and grope it and get in and listen to the engine,
but isn't that what these games are for? Those people that are
I'm a huge car enthusiast, and that does nothing for me.
But I mean, in Gran Turismo 5, couldn't you just like walk around your car and look at it? And
you can.
I never heard you complain about that.
Well, so actually, what I thought was really cool was in Gran Turismo 5, what you could do with those high counts, and actually with any of the cars, is you could take them into these beautiful locations and photograph them. And I actually totally got off on that. I was like making all kinds of photographs, and they had like super. What?
So that's cool, but walking around them is not cool.
Yeah, because I could take pictures and save them, upload them to Flickr, put them on my Facebook, and just like that. That's the kind of car worship that I do. Mm. Like, at least then I'm like sharing.
Flickr based car worship. Got it.
You. Duh! You don't think it sounds cooler to be able to take pictures like, and share them?
Like, it sounds like every time we have a conversation about Kinect, and I don't want to defend Kinect because, well, I don't really care either way, but it just sounds like you're like, whatever, I don't need it. What's the point of it? What's the purpose? It's just
not
like,
not true at all. Listen to me talk about Child of Eden just a minute ago. I loved it on
But
loved
that's
Kinect
a game built
Eden.
For it. And we're talking about games that have it included, and you're just like, what's the point of this?
Because I see a lot of times this stuff, the paste-in stuff, just to me, just feels so pasted in and so like... Put your development effort someplace that I care about.
It's added value. It's added value for people who bought a Kinect, and there's not enough titles that are standalone Kinect titles, but they want a game and they want to have an experience like Forza 4, mm-hmm. and they're like, hey, guess what? I have a Kinect. I'm going to buy this value. For my Xbox 360 anyway.
It's added value like the that. Stupid bullshit you usually get for added value that you take home and 3 weeks later you see sitting on the counter in the bag from what you really bought, and you're like, well, fuck, I'm throwing that away. Added value stuff is bullshit.
I think you have a point, because I do think what you're saying is that it's not enough, and I want to ask you about head tracking.
Okay, head tracking is awesome. Well, the head tracking is really cool. Yeah. Although it's weird because it still is forcing you to learn emotion. Because I was talking to this, I forget who I was talking.
I want to learn emotion.
Usually, when you drive a car, you don't actually physically move your head; you just glance, right? So it is going to take a little training to remember to do that. But I think being able to do that is really cool. Mm-hmm. That part is really
cool. And it works well?
It works very well.
Like, that's great.
That part was really fucking cool. The virtual steering wheel thing, I think, is not nearly as successful.
Now, that's my question. Can you choose to do one and not the other? Or is it an all or nothing kind of dealio?
Oh, you can use head tracking without
You can use head tracking with controller.
Yeah, okay,
gotcha. And in fact, one of the things I think people were really excited about is using head tracking with a full cockpit steering wheel. Yeah. Like, really get the behind-the-wheel experience.
At E3, they had units where it had the Kinect and you were sitting in a giant.
And it was awesome.
I know. I wanted to wait in line for that, but I was like, don't have time to wait
in
line.
I kept trying to cut in line because I knew the new community manager over there, Brian Eckbert.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to cut in line, but I was never able to.
And the new wheel and pedal setups that they've commissioned from whoever's making them, is it Mad Cat? I don't know who's making them. I don't want to misspeak myself, but there is a freaking really fantastic set of pedals that has an overhead gimbal that gives the pedals the right rock. You know, the right rocker arc. So instead of feeling connected at the bottom, they feel connected at the top like they would in a real car.
Dude, that's awesome.
And it really makes a difference. And it's really nice.
I've said this before on the show, but the whole adoption of the cockpit view in these games has turned me completely 180 degrees on my feeling for driving games. I love that. It's immersive. It makes me feel like a real driver.
My opinion. I love it. In simulation games, I have to drive in that view because I've driven cars for so long. The only way that feels right.
I feel so disconnected if I'm doing anything else. If that weird pavement view that people seem to like, I can't get into that. Yeah. But cockpit view?
I actually can't drive I can't play a racing game if it's the outer view. I have to drive it from inside the car because I can't figure out, even though you see the entire car, for some reason I can't figure out spacing between other cars.
See, I'm the opposite. I don't like cockpit view at all. Mm. I like the almost third person view where you see the whole car on the road. I much prefer that. I feel like my sense of balance is really off when I'm that close to the road. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't like it. I prefer to see the whole vehicle on the road.
So I was completely, now this is all I'm going to say, I was completely ready to write Forza 4 off because I thought, first of all, I thought 3 was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I really, like, they had been focusing so much on this Kinect stuff that I, in the back of my head, was picturing them basically making a slightly tuned up version of 3 with a bunch of Kinect features to it.
Right.
But it turns out that although they were putting all this emphasis on Kinect, they're definitely doing a significant amount of work on this new game. And it is, I always thought they had the best physics model as far as feeling like a car connected by tires to the pavement. Mm-hmm. They threw out all of their old stuff, did this deal with Pirelli, and now they have all of, you know, decades of Pirelli tire data to model the tire friction surface on pavement. And it's amazing.
So you're saying there's a lot riding on their tires?
Yes. It's amazing how good the game feels. Just driving. It's amazing how good it feels to put a rear-wheel drive car in a power oversteer in this and hold it in just the right spot because you can just sense how much gas to give the car to keep the tires slipping in the back end just the right amount to hold yourself in a drifted turn. It's just, it's so freaking spot on. It feels so good.
How are the power-ups? I thought it goes wrong.
It's buttery, man. That game just looks... So
it looks
beautiful.
Amazing. Here's the thing. It's like Gran Turismo always had this like photorealistic view and Forza always seemed a little, I don't want to say cartoonish, but I mean, it didn't seem like the same kind of quality that Gran Turismo had, I think. Whereas this game, In the vistas as well, when you see the environments, which was, I think, the biggest difference.
Ridiculous.
It looks amazing.
It looks gorgeous.
It looks amazing, yeah.
So that, you know, they're bumping up. They're going to do 12-car races with 16-car races in multiplayer. They have, like, a new AI that's totally, you know, been continuing to build on their Drivatar model. I think they're doing a lot of things that actually make me excited about it. And then I hear them focusing so much on the Kinect. I'm like, guys, you had a lot more cool stuff to talk about that you might want to bring up. They're redoing, I mean, you know, it's another thing they're doing. They're redoing the way that you can do online play to include asynchronous play, which are basically ghosts,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. But a like built-in ghost exchange system so that we can, you know, have a way to like race against each other even if we're not online at the same time. I'm excited about it.
Is Kinect factoring into the car customization at all, like in terms of scanning in objects to put onto your car's decals and things like that?
No, I don't know. I would imagine they'll keep building on the primitives system. They didn't really show that very much. Mm-hmm. They do have new community features, which I didn't pay a huge attention to.
Which, I mean, what else could they possibly add? The community for that game is insane.
It is pretty crazy. Yeah. It is actually pretty crazy.
You just kind of sparked an idea of the some of that Fun Lab stuff getting into that world, you know, where you can have any object scanned in and...
Right.
That kind of stuff would be.
It's not
really
like
cool.
It's going to stop people from doing anything bad. Have you seen some of the cars already available on Forza? Yeah.
So before we get away from racing, I also have to talk about my passion for F1, which had awesome. By the way, I hope people have watched some of the racing this year. The Canadian Grand Prix that just happened last weekend was amazing at the end. At the Canadian Grand Prix, way better than that hockey thing. the thing about F1 that a couple things stood out to me. They too have gone back to really working on their handling model at the tire level, and they had to do that because if you don't follow F1, one of the big developments this year was we had a change in tire provider for the circuits or for the Grand Prix, and we went to Pirelli tires, and the Pirelli tires have had massive amounts of problem. The degradation of the tires has been, especially in the softs, has been really bad. So it was really fascinating to see how much work the developers have put into getting this new physics system right and getting the new tire model in. They showed some graphics of how they had modeled each of the different tires through a number of different scenarios to really get down how they degrade, and then worked back and forth with the actual teams to make sure that they were getting that right. And right off the bat, I got to drive it with a wheel. Right off the bat, you could immediately feel that they're really getting an improved sense of car connected to the ground. They're working in the same engine, so they too, like Zav was talking about with the game, you know, Forza 4 looking prettier. Mm-hmm. You can really see that in the new F1. One of the courses I raced on is Spa, and Spa is renowned for being it's set in these beautiful wooded hillside, and it has a lot of elevation change. And I don't exactly remember what it looked like last year, but I know it didn't look like this. Looked like jump off the screen, noticeable upgrade. What else are they doing that's exciting?
This is Codemasters, right?
Yes, it is Codemasters. Okay. It is Codemasters. So there's also two other. So we talked about tires for a second. There's also two other rules developments that change significantly the way Grand Prix is run this year. And both of those will be in the game. One of them is the KERS system, which is this. It's a kinetic energy recovery system. So basically, what it is it lets the cars get a horsepower boost based off of some regenerative motors that are in the brakes. And Jeff is so. He's like, you guys are looking at me like I'm speaking Greek. So anyway,
I just hope they're building that in.
They're building that in. But the part that's cool is that those systems have had troubles, especially with Red Bull. And Red Bull happens to be the fastest team for the season. And one of the things that's been fascinating is they've been so fast, but their KERS systems have had problems. And I said, jokingly, so are you going to model the problems that Red Bull and so forth have had with KERS? And their answer was, you know, we're looking into it, and we think we're going to have that in the game. So it's not just going to be here's a system, flick a switch, and it works. They're actually going in and modeling some of the like technical issues teams are having with the system, which if they get that in, I think that'd be fucking cool.
Wow.
Because it would be really interesting to have that authenticity there.
Of having problems.
Yes. Go ahead.
How are the power-ups?
See, I'm not really into the simulator racing games. I'm more of a Need for Speed on the Run kind of girl.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk. We're talking about racing games.
Tap
you completely
X,
left
tap
the
triangle. We can come to that.
You are
a
huge car guy, and you sound super excited about it.
I'm super excited about it. And then the final thing that really got me excited is they have full race grid now online. So
I hate Half Race Grid.
Dude, you...
Oh, it's so half-assed.
I know is Garnet.
They have it's 16 live players, but they have to do 8 with AI. But you do get a full grid now when you play online. And you can play, and this is really cool too. If we were all into F1, we could do
which we are not.
That's the big
a little dream Garnet always had.
If any of you were into F1, you can play the championship cooperatively. So like, you know, teams have teams of two drivers. We could be a team of drivers and actually have that relationship of like who's gonna be number one, who's gonna be number two, are we working together to win? Cool. That's really fucking cool.
All I know is
I want to be the guy in the pit crew that hits on all the girls in the stands. That's why I'll be on that side of the team.
Zav and Jeff are coming to my house tomorrow night for game night, and one of the games that we will be playing. This is board game night. Mm-hmm. One of the games we'll be playing, I chose specifically to try to get you to come. It's called Formula D, and it's all about Formula Racing. Formula One racing, well, and it's awesome.
It's called Formula D, but it's about... Are you sure it's not drift racing?
Yeah, I'm positive. That's actually two sides to the board. There's a street race side, and
Formula D is the big drift race champ series.
It's not drifting.
Okay.
At least the game doesn't play as drifting. But it used to be called Formula Day when it was a Dutch
game. Okay.
Now it's just...
Well, why don't you just save it, and we'll do it another day? You just save it.
We'll play again.
But I'm a huge F1 fan. Can you not understand?
Fuck you.
How are the power-ups?
Come on. I don't deserve that just because I like more cartoony racing games.
Andrew, did you see...
If you're excited about F1, you have every reason to be. The handling model is definitely improved. The tires feel really good. The aero feels really good.
It's the Garnet Show.
I love my game, and I want to talk about it. So there.
It's cool. Sounds good.
All right.
Did you play Need for Speed the Run?
I did.
Does it play as bad as it looked?
I don't understand why they made a game all about like eating a burrito and then needing to go to the bathroom.
the run. I make that mistake all the time.
I get that so wrong.
Why is there foot chases in Need for Speed now?
I think that...
Soup up your pants? That's the only thing. Nitrous.
To answer your question, I don't think that the demo did the game justice. I'm a fan of the Need for Speed games, and I think the demo was probably a poor example of how the full game is going to play out. I personally am not really a fan of the QuickTime elements that are...
What makes you think that demo was a poor example of the way the game is going to play out? That was every bullet point they're stressing in that game.
You think so?
Yes.
I just thought that I just want to see more cars, really.
I don't understand
why. At the end of the day, I got to drive one police car in the demo, and I wanted to
drive a Mustang.
I wanted to drive more cars.
You got to drive the Mustang for 30 seconds.
It just doesn't really count.
It seems like they're throwing way too many eggs in that basket. And, like, do we really need 2 Need for Speed games a year? And if
we need
another one, does it need to have, like, on-foot stuff? I mean,
well,
do you need a story?
Less than 10% of the game, to be
okay,
fair.
Okay, but why is that 10% exist?
Exactly.
Why do we need a story element? Oh, that's why I'm driving the blue car now. I was so worried about the narrative structure of Need for Speed.
I feel like if they had put in a racing system, an on-foot racing system that was akin to something in Mirror's Edge, where you're like, you know, there's
I think
no
they should
guns.
Have done track and field.
Only if they resurrect the mat. Yeah.
Well, because we're not talking about F1, you're not into it.
So the funny thing about the run, actually, we talked about this on the last week's show. I brought up the runs a little bit.
I'm just gonna keep calling it the runs.
Press X for Imodium.
Need for Speed the runs.
Oh God. Oh God.
They jumped into the Frostbite engine. And
see, that's what's really cool, because the game looks great.
It looks great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the physics modeling, obviously the engine has a whole bunch under the hood in that regard that we didn't even know about, because the car driving part is really, really solid. I thought that part was really fun.
It's the only thing solid in the runs.
Wow.
We have
disappointed I didn't think of it first. More disappointed that it was said.
I cracked myself up. I apologize to everyone listening.
Playing the part of Garnet Lee on this week's show is everybody else other than Garnet Lee.
That's sad but true.
I'm not proud of myself, no. Yeah.
But I think the reason I said that about the demo is because they were very adamant about wanting to convey the idea of it being a chase movie that you're in the midst of, that is very dramatic. And so that's why they have, you know, like the opening scene where you're just driving the Mustang for a minute, and then it takes control even as you're driving and makes sure that Porsche Cayman or Cayenne crashes into you. Mm-hmm. So you have to get out on foot. So you have to have like the chase scene. And then they were like, I talked to them about it.
I think it could be cool. It's a new kind of game. Just because it's called Need for Speed and it isn't a classic Need for Speed game, that might hang
up
some
fine.
People. But yeah, it can be a new kind of action game.
My problem is that they're not approaching it the right way. they said, you know, in talking to him about it, they said, well, the thing was that we had all these narrative stretches that we wanted to tell, but just sitting there watching them while after you've been racing seemed really boring. So the problem...
But they're dropping in cutscenes like while you're racing.
The problem isn't whether or not you tap X or A or don't tap X or A. It's that your story isn't good enough yet and you haven't put it together well enough. And if you're sitting there watching it and it's boring, it's because it's fucking boring. It's not because you're not pressing X.
Do you think Yu Suzuki ruined games single-handedly?
You mean because of Shenmue? Because
he invented QTEs.
Well, he didn't invent them, number one. Obviously, Dragon's Lair had them.
Well,
like,
I guess,
and
yeah.
Aeons ago. I mean, it's just another form of interaction. Yeah. No, yeah. Because I think that a lot of times, even in Shenmue, that it you can do QTE that works.
I was just being trolly and stuff.
God of War does it really well. There's
another one, right? Mm-hmm. And Heavy Rain, you know, a little bit different, you know, progression there. But my point is that if you want to do this chase movie game, then you better damn well have a good chase movie script. It's not just, we're going to do Need for Speed and throw in some cutscenes and make it a chase movie.
I mean, do you think it's trying to compete with Driver San Francisco in that sense?
I definitely that's where it wants to aspire to, right? That's where they're coming from, is like, we're going to make this great, you know, it's going to be like an exciting experience, like a Hollywood chase scene movie. You're going to love it. You're going across the country.
I think that's a cool idea.
The idea.
I can get behind that.
Okay, I'm buying in that far. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do that, then if it's going to be that important to have the story in it, then you better nail the story. And it's got to be better than trying to patch in a couple of button taps to make it interesting.
I think it will be. I think, you know, we just haven't seen enough of it yet.
Wow.
Yeah, I joke, but I actually haven't seen the game.
Blind faith.
So I don't know.
I can only assume that it's not going to suck. I would rather assume it's going to be awesome than assume it's going to suck.
All right.
It's a very positive
She loves
outlook.
Loving things. I can relate.
All right. All right.
Can I bring up something that I love?
No.
Okay. and this is old news, so we don't have to talk about it very long, but I just got on this bandwagon. I'm late to this party.
You
I
bought
know
an
it.
iPhone.
No. This Atari 2600 thing, it's crazy. No, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood multiplayer. It's so good.
Really? You haven't played it before?
I had not played it before.
It's a lot of fun.
They sponsored our show, so we didn't review that game. Uh-huh. And I just wanted to point that out. I came away from E3 going, man, I really want to play Assassin's Creed. I got excited about Assassin's Creed again.
Yeah.
And popped it in with Dan and Alex, and, you know, I get it. I'm late to the party on this, but... It is finally a completely new kind of experience in multiplayer. They are completely blazing a trail that no one has ever done before, and it should be applauded more. I love the fact that we hopped on and there was already full games still going for that, because it is an awesome experience. Slow-paced chases that are nail-biting and thrilling and exciting. Wow, that game is awesome.
It's a great cat and mouse gameplay.
It's brilliant.
There's an indie game that's coming out, I don't know when, called Spy Party. I don't know if you've seen or heard
yes,
of the game.
Yes, I have, yeah.
And
it
reminds me, have you seen it yes. or played it? I haven't got to play it yet, but I mean, it's the whole, have you heard of Andrea?
I have not.
So the whole thing is like, it's two players, and you play, one person is a sniper, and you have one bullet, and one person is a spy, and that you have to complete objectives while you're in this party, and you have to walk around pretending like you're an NPC, but complete your objective while this other player is looking for you to see if you slip up or do something, and he has one bullet to kill you specifically. And it's that cat and mouse thing of like, you know, everyone, there's NPCs in the world that look exactly like the character that you are in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and you have to pretend like you're with them, and you act like they're just a regular person, and then you, you know, try to shiv your friends, and it's one of those games where it's like you will end up hating your friends because you're like, how did you find me? And so that's really great. And
it's
they're bringing
so
it all back for Revelations.
And the idea that as we've gotten, you know, all through the whole deathmatch paradigm that's started way back when first person shooters started, everything's got faster, crazier, ramped up. And then you have these guys where slowing things down, walking, blending in, being subtle is just as exciting as all of that stuff. It's an accomplishment, and I think
okay.
it should be applauded.
So let me ask then, translating that forward into upcoming games, did you get to see the Hitman demo?
No, I didn't get any. Didn't have any Square Enix demos.
All right, so... The Hitman demo, then I'll give you a quick overview of it, and then you can tell me how you relate to it. The Hitman demo is the agent starts off in an abandoned library, huge, huge facility, right? And he's in the back of the stacks, and they know he's there. So they've brought in a police squad of God, I don't know. How many people? Like, it must have been like 20 or 30 fucking dudes.
At least, yeah.
It's ridiculous. There's cops everywhere crawling through this thing. And the guy, it was a played demo. We didn't get to play. It was played for us. And the guy running it, like, somehow makes his way through all these stacks, you know, like, perfectly avoiding all of the different search routines, kills a couple or disables a couple of the cops, does, like, this amazing, like, weight and timing thing to go over and knock out the power when they've got the, you know, they've, like, put the fuse box back together. He, like, gets over there, jams a screwdriver, and it messes up again. And then, like, goes through the rest of the level doing the same thing, like, you know, cover to cover, knowing just when to move. It looks very fantastic, but you're thinking the whole time, like, oh, how the hell would I ever do this?
Well, there's a new feature, actually, that helps you do that. It's called Instinct, that allows you to show – what it does is it predicts the path of movement for characters that are attempting to you know, find you out, and it also lets you see what objects in the room you can interact with. So if you're hiding behind a bookshelf,
overlay that lets me see exactly the important stuff in the room.
Radical.
That's weird.
So then the final part of this.
It's new for Hitman. I didn't say it was new in general.
No, I'm
agent,
not.
Agent running across rooftops, chased by a helicopter. Super dramatic, very cool. But my point of all this is that here's like that sort of, you know, very old paradigm, like very Sam Fishery at first, and then, you know, full out freaking crazy action at the end. Does that sound like something that you think is cool for Hitman, or how would you have liked to seen maybe Hitman maybe mature some into the cat and mouse thing? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I've never been a huge Hitman guy. He's never been that series has never been one close to my
heart.
You're not
a Hitman guy?
Not a Hitman guy. I'm very hot and cold on stealth games in general.
I am too.
Because getting it wrong is very easy, and it turns into just a stress fest that I don't enjoy.
I don't like
Beyond Good and Evil?
Well, yeah, I mean, I sort of champion against fail states, and stealth games are sort of the fail state kings, you know?
Yes, they are.
Yank! And, start that over. Yank! Start that over. So I love the idea of trying to evolve that into something a little bit more dynamic so that I can still have that feeling. The feeling that's fun in stealth games is I know more than anybody else in this room, and using that information can take them out. Cool. Which Batman does really well, for example.
Right. It's because he's the Batman.
What they don't do well is when that plan goes awry, then figuring out how to deal with that. Now, the latest Splinter Cell tried to deal with that with like an oh shit button that basically lets you take out dudes quickly and easily. But I don't think that's the best way to handle it either. So I'm curious that if this predictive pathfinding or something kind of...
It was very hard to tell because the demo was clearly so practiced. It was hard to get a sense for how much can you use this to actually get ahead and how much of this is going to be, you know, just... Learn by failure. And well, I don't like learn by failure.
Yeah, and I don't know how the demo was when you saw it, but when I saw it, the two guys from the developer that were in the room did not say anything during the whole demo.
Yeah.
They didn't describe what they were doing. They didn't say, we have this new feature.
Nope,
like,
same thing.
It was literally like we just sat there for like 25 minutes and watched it, and afterwards I was like, it would be really awesome to know like what was happening.
Although it is... I mean, part of it is, and we're going to talk in a little bit on the other side about whether or not the enthusiast press is, you know, too cynical about some of these things. I mean, part of it all is like you're watching this, you're like, this is too good to be true. But then there's also that creeping part of like, well, I've been playing games for a long time, and that looks like really amazing when you're watching it. But at the same time, I know that got to be pretty tough to play, or what typically happens is it's too easy to play. Mm-hmm. You know, so which way is it going to go? But I mean, yeah, like. The way he was able to maneuver through the book stacks and find great places to take cover and the way the cops acted within the environment was very, you know, a lot of times clearly an evolution over, you know, like the original era of, say, Metal Gear, where, you know, everyone was on like a track.
Right.
These guys didn't give the impression of being on a track. They looked like real policemen investigating the way they would, you know, using their flashlights the way they would. There wasn't any like, oh, he didn't shine his flashlight over there, so I'm supposed to go over there. I get it. Ha ha.
Right.
You know, it felt natural and working really well. And you're just thinking, wow, that would make it really hard to get through here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it, Zav?
I didn't, but I'm looking forward to it. The thing I think that is important to note when it comes to something like Splinter Cell, there was that oh shit button, but I think it did a pretty good job of making you feel powerful like that character is supposed to feel. I mean, narratively, it made sense in that sense. Also, this Hitman situation, it sounds like that's probably going to be later on in the game where you've sort of learned how
and
the mechanics work out. You know what I mean? So I'm interested in that game because I love that series. I'm a big fan of that series. And the games always seemed a little floaty to me in terms of the camera and the control of the character. And the fail state thing is going to be a problem. The one thing that Splinter Cell did right was instead of giving you that fail state like the old Splinter Cell games did, it gave you the ability to have a fighting chance if you had to go to arms.
Yeah.
And this game needs to be able to do that as well.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, you know, bringing it back to Assassin's Creed, how we got onto this in the first place, there was a lot of that in the campaign mode of Assassin's Creed where you have to be stealthy.
Yep.
If you get discovered, you have to go back out. And I found that really frustrating in certain single-player missions. But I think what's good about that kind of like stealthiness is that in the multiplayer, that you can take a break from it. Like if you liked it in this one and then you get tired, you can take a break or you can go out and do a different map. And I think in general, like just personally, I like it in small doses in games.
Well, if you want to check out more of the Hitman, we actually have a video of that demo, which was provided by Eidos. So you can check that out on shacknews.com under the video tab. Just look up Hitman and it'll be in the game page. We still have many more games to get back to clean house on E3. Some things I want to get back to. I want to talk about Ace Combat for a little bit. People ask me about Torchlight 2, Sly Cooper. And then we've got you guys' feedback. So we've got plenty more still to come. You won't want to miss it. Don't go anywhere. We will be back in a moment.
So tell me about the creation of Raptor Man, how you made him, and what was cool about him.
Raptor Man's mentor is Batman. Batman. So he can heal and shapeshift.
What was cool about Raptor Man?
Laser beams. Ice, fire, gadgets. Mentalism. Ice, fire, gadgets. Mentalism. Raptor Man's nature, so he can heal and shapeshift.
Raptor Man's nature, so he can heal and shapeshift. Raptor Man sitting right here.
How do you know my secret identity, dude? Oh, that sucks. That's
cover to take off blown.
I forgot to take off my CGI created costume.
I think it's the bite marks from that radioactive raptor that bit you to turn you into Raptor Man.
That's true.
Hey, still to come later on in the show, we are going to hopefully tactfully broach the subject of PR and its handling of...
just like we tactfully broach everything.
Yes.
I screwed that
the
up.
The runs?
You're welcome.
Anyway, we're going to try and deal with some of the fallout from the Duke Nukem review in the best that we can. Meanwhile, let's get through some of these last E3 games real quickly. I wanted to hit... So, Ace Combat, always been a big fan of that. Anyone see Assault Horizon other than me?
Saw it, did not play it.
Okay. It looks good. I'm curious to see how many people are going to like this new, like, lock-on. Really, long and short is they have this new lock-on combat dogfighting system where you get a plane into this larger circle, and once you do, you're, like, locked in a different mechanic where you're just chasing them. And it becomes that's like the close-up dogfighting thing.
So you don't have to actively follow them? That kind of takes over control of following them?
It doesn't completely actively take them over because you're trying to get them held within the circle long enough to get a different sort of lock-on to them. I'm not sure that I really liked it because I still liked Ace Combat as, you know, PC Flight Sim Lite, which now is just a little bit too PC Flight Sim Lite. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And they're also going for real world. I don't know.
It's Andrew Yoon did the preview at Check for it, and he said that it seemed like a more cinematic approach to what they're
it's
trying to
definitely
do.
Definitely more cinematic. Yeah. They're definitely going for a more cinematic approach.
He said the helicopter stuff didn't work out so well, though.
I didn't think it worked out so well either. You're playing, so the level they showed where you had the helicopter piece, it looked like you were like truck driving almost. I don't know. It just didn't. It wasn't together yet. I think I'm still optimistic as someone who's always enjoyed Ace Combat, But I did also sort of enjoy Ace Combat the way I enjoyed Ridge Racer, as not completely real. And the fantasy part was kind of fun. You know, the fantasy part of like these crazy giant flying fortresses and stuff was always fun to take on.
Right.
What else do I have down here? We did that one.
Torchlight.
Torchlight 2, which I got to play. You know how much I love my League games.
Yeah, me too.
But the thing is, there's not that much to talk about. Like I said last
week,
it's co-op. They've added land play.
Looks the same, right?
Well, it doesn't look the same. It looks gorgeous.
Better?
Oh, I definitely say better. I mean, I think they put a lot of work into art resources and into lighting in the game. So they have a lot of, you know, like shadow and candlelight and sunlight. And, you know, one of the things that is different, especially about this game, is that when you come out, you know, it's no longer laid out as was Diablo 1, where it's just like go into a dungeon that's under the city and you're just going down, 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 down.
Right.
There's now, you know, exterior.
It's Diablo 2.
It is sort of Diablo 2-ish. There's exterior levels where you're on the surface where, you know, for instance, we're playing, I started off and I'm playing in some sort of dungeon, but it's very cathedral-esque, but it was underground. And we came back up out to the surface, and instead of being in town, we were out in the countryside and then had to fight our way through the countryside to get back to where the town was.
That's cool.
And so there was, you know, there was like trolls and there were prisons and there was a whole like ongoing like slaver battle thing that was happening. And I thought that was very cool. It was very immersive. It was very extended. It really felt like the difference from Diablo to Diablo 2. Not surprisingly.
Do you like the idea of these really large randomly generated areas in the game? Do you think that will make you play the game more?
No.
No?
You know what? I think that my favorite of modern loot games, I mean, my favorite is Diablo 2. Right. And Diablo 2, I think that, yes, here's the deal. I think that managing a dynamically generated world is a really difficult proposition because the computer doesn't have the art acumen that an art director has when they're laying out levels. So for most cases, I think that you wind up like the Champions of Norrath games always looked great because that's all, you know, it's all hand built and you get these fantastic places. Dark Alliance 2, you know, you get these great adventure areas. And Diablo 2, however they, you know, and Diablo 1 to a large extent, but Diablo 2 especially, however they ran that system that generated the levels, it still maintained that sense when you got into places that this was really well put together, and I guess it was a matter of different elements that they put into it and where the elements go. But if
which it means it's not impossible.
No, it's not impossible.
Right.
I wasn't trying to politician your answer.
I think that, I mean, you've already sold me with it's Torchlight but co-op. I'm already day one purchase right there. But the idea that I can now play with a friend over and over and over, and there's never going to be the game fact of go around to the left and there's the chest and get it and walk to the north two spaces and get that. And because that's impossible in these randomly generated levels. Yeah. I like that.
The only thing that worries me about this game specifically is that there are like 18 different areas in which it randomizes. The whole level is broken up to a structure of 18 to 26 squares. And I think when you're randomly generating that big of an area, you could run into some issues where it's like a lot of this stuff doesn't make sense. It feels like it's being built by a computer. It doesn't feel like
that's
a real environment.
So the areas that I played didn't have that problem.
Okay.
So I think that these guys, much like so they answer the question, because you were asking a bigger question, but this micro answer is that this thing looked great. It did do that sort of, this has been put together by someone, even though it is all procedurally generated, which is impressive.
I wonder how much of that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, of like, I know this is randomly generated, so it's going to feel randomly generated.
Well, you know what it is in Torchlight 2, and it doesn't feel it. It looks really good.
Right.
And the character I played was really cool. She was I forget what the name of her was. I should have written it down, but she was basically a ranged character, but she had some really cool crowd control and close-up control device attacks. Like one of her attacks when the monsters got in close to her was that she would like whip her cane, her staff around. I almost said her cane. She whip her cane around, Shunny.
That would be awesome.
She whip her staff around and do like a quick stun move, drop a shock trap right where she was, and then do a somersaulting backflip to like give a little spacing. And so then when the monsters came forward after being stunned, they'd go right into the shock trap, and then she could either continue backing up or come right back in to attack them. It was really cool.
That, incidentally, it reminded me, that was one of the cool things of the Dragon's Dogma demo, is that one of your companions is this old wizard lady, and she's an old crone You know, she's like this wizened old woman who's a, it's like, oh, you never really see that. That's kind of cool. You never see like the 70-year-old companion.
It was really it's funny trying, I mean, I
are there
I told
relationships
them,
in that game? Can you like, you know?
Hey, Grandma.
What's up?
What I told them, and the one thing that's interesting about Torchlight is it's now being published by Perfect World. Mm. So it's been picked up by
who
an MMO.
Has a ton of stuff backing them now.
Seriously.
They own Cryptic. They have that.
Right.
And their business in is it South Korea that they have the majority of their business?
I believe so, yes.
They are reckoning. Oh, no, I believe it's China, actually.
Is it China?
Did they mention anything about the Torchlight MMO?
Well,
they weren't talking about that.
What do you mean about the Torchlight MMO? What's not MMO about this?
Well, they're doing a Torchlight MMO.
You mean the
They've mentioned that they're working on a Torchlight MMO.
Yeah, no, they weren't talking about that. They weren't talking about that. They were only talking about the party adventuring game. And they were a big, it's because their big push was, well, we're also, you know, for people who thought we were just an online company, we're going to include land play as well. So this would be a great land party game.
Have they said whether or not Torchlight 2 is going to be immediately available across all platforms when it launches or just on PC?
They haven't even said anything about what platforms it'd be available. It's a PC game right now.
Oh, I thought they have already said.
Okay. We can double check. But as far as I know,
I like the mystery. It's cool.
Yeah, what else we got in here?
Sly
Cooper. Interesting. What do you think about the return of Sly?
I'm so excited.
Are you still excited when it's not Sucker Punch?
Yeah. I mean, I will, it's innocent till proven guilty.
Well, I mean, no innocent to it. The development team that's on this game is the team that did the HD ports for PS3.
Which look great.
I
really want to play.
They earned Naughty Dog's trust. They all are big Sucker devotees Punch. of the Sly franchise. So that's that going for them. But at the same time, when I hear them talk about it, I also sort of get this idea of, well, it's like what fan devs would make if they're making Sly. And I almost would rather see what those guys would rather have, would you know, like what the original team would do if they were making it going forward, as opposed to someone saying, oh, I love Sly. I could make a Sly game. Mm-hmm. We have the technology. Let's rebuild him.
I think that could be really interesting, though. I think, you know, fans probably know the series just as well, if not more than, you know, a random developer coming in.
I think more than anything, a developer taking over for a major company is going to really try to create an experience that is equal in quality and experience
to
the original games that they're inspired by.
I'm just so glad this character's back. It's a great
I'm very
franchise.
Glad the character's back, and the game looks fantastic. I mean, it has that if you like cel shaded, they're using a very heavy line cel shade, so you get a really prominent black outline around the character, which I thought looked really cool. The colors were very, very rich, and you know, it had that really pretty. It looks like the Sucker Punch games did as well, mm-hmm. And the balance thing is going to be interesting, right? Because right now, what they're talking about is they'd like to bring back a lot of the feel of the original Sly. And the original Sly had more boss fights. And so, you know, one of the things they were showing in their demos was they were showing this boss fight where, you know, one of the things about Sly now is he has suits. So the suits allow him to disguise himself. And the two they showed, one of them was a ninja suit and he had like a ninja adventure area that was like a piratey kind of thing. It was kind of cool. And then the other one was a like fire samurai outfit. And when he donned this outfit, he was able to repulse these fireballs that were thrown at him by the King Tiger guy. And so it was very much a, you know, pattern recognition and defeat boss kind
old
of thing.
School.
Old school, like the first one, which they went away from in 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure that Sucker Punch would have gone that direction. That's what I'm saying. See, it's like, it's weird. Mm-hmm. It's like the fans making like, well, we loved one. Here's what we loved about. Oh, we wish we had more of this part in 2 and 3, but we love this part of 2. We love this part of 3. Let's make a Sly Cooper game.
What'd you think of Darkness 2?
By the way, I also have the answer before we talk about Darkness 2. Have the answer on Torchlight 2 announced for Microsoft Windows and Mac OS 10.
Microsoft Windows?
Microsoft Windows and Mac OS 10. At sometime in 2011, although I would say from having looked at where they were, that I would guess they're going to try and get done before the big crunch at the end of the year. Right. Although they have a lot of experience in online, so they'll probably do a beta. I'd hope they do a beta.
I think they've already said that they will.
They were weird. They were talking about like whether or not they're going to do a beta. But anyway.
I thought Darkness looked good.
Did
they show the same thing they showed at GDC?
No.
Really?
Yeah, they showed the the kind of expanded skill trees that you can do in Darkness, which I thought was really cool. There's like four main branches that you can choose to go down with your upgraded abilities. And they had this one called the Heart of Darkness, which is in the demonic branch, which allows you to see and shoot to gun channel through walls, which allows you to shoot your bullets through walls and see the targets through walls.
For a short period of time.
Right. Okay. It's just like an ability that has like a recharge period or something. I don't know exactly how that works, but I thought it was a cool mechanic to add to the gameplay. Not to mention how fun it is to use the demon arms.
Yeah, it had a very Bulletstorm vibe to me. It definitely felt like a playground of whimsical killing. You know, it's like, be creative and pick up a dude and hold him for a while you're killing another dude, and rip a door off that car and use it as a shield for a while, and then throw it at a guy and slice him in half. It just felt like all these creative ways of killing, and it did seem to have some sort of XP or point allocation to unique kills as well. And I loved that in Bulletstorm, so I hope that they go farther in that direction, because especially with the, what are they calling it, four-wielding?
Quad-wielding.
It's a quad, baby.
Yeah, that. I think it could be really fun. I don't know about the narrative aspects as far as living up to the first game's narrative. From what I've seen so far,
I'm more worried about it living up to the standard Starbreeze set just as a production value.
Well, it looks great.
It looks great, but they have slices.
Well, they have this really unique art style. Every texture is hand painted. So it really does look like a comic
book. That part
book,
does look good.
Which
I
is
agree.
It's got a very differentiating, you know, visual style. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, they worked really closely with Top Cow in the design of the game, so I'd hope it, you know, really kind of pays homage to the comic series. And I think that, I mean, I was really, for someone who didn't get into the first game at all, I was like, this game makes me want to go back and kind of check it out. I really liked it. I thought it was fun. Lots
of
fun.
Speaking of sequels that I bet Mr. Kanata's into, how about Darksiders?
Oh, man. Yes. Give it to me. Put it in my eye holes. I want it.
You want it in your eye holes? What happened to your game flap?
Also that. I love Darksiders. I think it's one of the... It's totally underrated. It's awesome. I'd rather... I'll say this to troll. I'd rather play Darksiders than Skyward Sword right now.
Oh, come the hell on.
I would.
Dude.
I would.
That's Jeff Kanata.
I'm sorry. Skyward Sword looked very good. And
you can't say I'm going to troll and then say something like that and not have people going, you just said you're going to troll us. You're such a douche.
I am a douche. I shouldn't have said that. But the idea that you played as War in the first game and now you play as Death, that's great. I love the idea. Maybe we'll get a four-game series where you play as all the Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Awesome. It looks like it's really going to not miss a beat in that series, and I'm ready for it.
Do you think that they're up to wearing the mantle of having been a sleeper, now expectations? You know, I think a lot of people, like as happens with this, some people have played Darkness after it got word of mouth, but some other people will now say, well, there's a sequel coming, I'll just wait and play that. So they could potentially have a significant amount of buzz when this comes out. You think they're
I
up to that?
I hope they do.
The great thing is all the game, all the games that it stole elements from have had sequels, so now they can steal all the elements from the sequels of those games and put it back in.
I don't know. I don't think that's.
I'd ever. So I never really got into it. I understand.
Really?
I
don't see War with an ocarina.
I think it has a lot to do with that genre of game. I don't really like that. Bayonetta is another game that I should play that people really love, but I just never really got into it.
I don't think those two are that similar to me.
I mean, in terms of it being this combo-driven, action-focused, like God of War-ish type of game.
It's Zelda, dude. It starts out God of War, and it quickly becomes Zelda.
Okay.
It really does. You get so many different abilities and unique items, and you're going into the place where you have to solve the puzzle to get the next item.
The dungeon design. The dungeon design
which
is very much
I love that. There need to be more... Zelda needs to be a genre. There need to be more games like that. Because I can't wait for Nintendo to put one out every 3 years or whatever it is.
Well, I think part of it is if you're a developer, like as soon as you start thinking in along the lines of aping Zelda, you have to think, well, fuck, can I live up to that?
I think
you're always
going
to be compared to Zelda.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody compares everything to everything. So, you know, bring your A game.
All right, my quick hit also is a weird game that I wanted to mention just for a minute because it was definitely an E3 of a ton of shooters, and I think this one, I think a lot of people glanced right past this one and laughed, and that would be Binary Domain.
I played it.
Okay, and you tell me what you thought of it, and then I'll tell you why I'm halfway tweaked for it.
Oh, you tell me what tell you what I thought of it. I thought it looked really good. I liked the android, how you kind of can kill parts of them and shoot their
definitely
face
that's
off
cool. And, like shooting off the piece of the android.
And they keep coming at you. You know, it's that. There's a million movies that have done that where you kill part. You know, Terminator being one, where you kill,
things
shoot the legs, and it's
you,
coming
like,
at you. Shoot its arm off, it's still coming at you. I mean, it's very Gears of War, which is not a bad thing either. Why were you tweaked about it?
Well, so. As most people who listen, many people who listen will know, I'm already an anime fan in the first place. But I love it, and a role-playing game fan. And I think there's a lot of squad-based shooters that are out there. And the idea that this game brings in sort of, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Star Ocean's Private Actions. You know, did anyone play Star? Yeah, so it's Lost.
Isn't that the Howard Stern movie?
Yes. So I liked the idea that you're building the relationships between the members of the squad in the game while you're playing it. So not it's like not separate, right. But like while you're out in the field, hey, your ass looks great. Like that part's awesome. Like, you know, like you have to decide. Okay, am I gonna
does the ass look great?
Am I gonna tell this girl that her ass looks great, or am I just not gonna go? Or the other guy's like, yeah, you know, like. Do you like to go have a drink or two after you get off a mission? And it's like, well,
there are robots attacking me. Why are we talking about that?
I think that's actually some.
The entire city is under siege right now. I do not
want
to get a drink with you.
Are you kidding me? You don't think that, like, as dudes are out, you don't think that, like, as you're out there on a tense mission, you might have a little conversation between your friends as you're, like, you know, like, walking on patrol or something?
If a guy asked me out in the middle of a firefight, I'd punch him in the face. I'm just saying.
Maybe they can make the character like that. I think that if they could play that element up, that it would be really cool. Like, it would get me really engaged with the group.
Sasha, come here. I just want to say one thing. If we don't get out of this alive, I just want you to know one thing.
What?
Your ass looks amazing.
God damn. You are such a troll. Damn it, you are such a troll. So anyway, they're gonna have, I mean... The characters they showed were Dan, Big Bo, and Faye.
Oh, Dan is in it? Fuck!
Wait, it's a squad-based tactical shooter? Is that what it is?
It is
cover-based.
Cover-based, yeah.
It's Gears.
So yeah,
which is cool.
So you have like a heavy gunner, demo, sniper, that kind of stuff. You always have two squad mates with you on patrol. But I still think like this deal of using a conversation system.
If it actually has, they keep saying, well, they don't automatically like you in most games.
Right.
Everybody loves you and you're always great, and they don't automatically. But is that going to have any actual consequences? That's my question.
I think it would be really even if it doesn't have game breaking consequences. If it has narrative structure. Consequences, I think that would be really cool. You know, like if Faye becomes pissed off at me because I keep trying to hit on her or grab her ass or something, she's still going to be like, she's still going to cover me because we're like,
yeah,
we're
right still on the same.
But like, they could still like, it could be
Isn't that your exact
a lot of interesting tension that comes up there.
Wasn't that your exact criticism with Prey 2 though?
What?
Was that, this morality system will have any actual bearing on the game?
This isn't a morality system. It's not pretending to be something more than it is. It's not pretending to have some impact on the outcome of missions. It's not saying, well, if you do this, this will happen, or if you do this, this will happen. It's saying...
It's just a layer.
It's build relationships. It's build personal relationships with the characters. That, to me, is interesting and different than change the outcome of the way the game's going to play.
Well, I mean, if you're trying to build relationships and it doesn't change anything, what's the point of actually trying to build a relationship in the game?
Change things narratively, it can do. Change things in the way the structure and the mechanic of the game work now.
See, things can go either one way or the other. You are actually in a binary domain.
Sweet mother of Christ. They should call it that.
Are we talking about hardware? I see a Super Bowl.
Oh, that was
from
last week.
I actually want to see. Oh, I kind of got excited.
Did anyone else see?
So the hardware got you excited?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know it, baby.
Never mind.
If we don't get out of this alive.
Even if we do. Let me just say,
your ass looks great.
Did anyone see Aliens Colonial Marines?
I did.
Yes.
How'd you feel about it, Jeff Cannata? With two N's, one T.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, interesting that you bring it up.
Okay.
I did not think it looked great.
Okay.
Here's the thing. You know, I think this. I said this last week. Perhaps is that you know we have a bunch of, and they said this in the demo. There's a whole genre of games that have basically stolen the idea of a space marine from the movie Aliens.
If you realize you got lambasted for talking about Warhammer Space Marines as if you didn't know about Space Marines.
I know, but that's not, they missed the point of what I was trying to say with that. Yeah, which is...
What? That never happens on the internet.
Anyway, so I thought the aliens themselves, the look of the aliens was really cool. It really looked right. Neat. They had a cool sheen to them. The way they moved about the environment was neat. Popping in and grabbing that guy.
In the beginning of the demo.
Yeah, that was cool. But it really doesn't have much other than, hey, we're alien. We're actually the movie. to be.
I thought you meant the aliens were like, hey, we're aliens. Roar.
Roar.
My biggest issue with it is from a narrative perspective, I think that, you know, if you think about the original Aliens movie, the original Alien, it is about one monster taking this well-oiled machine of a crew that knows exactly what they're doing and turning them into isolated, lost people in their own home.
Right.
This ship that belongs to them, they know everything about it. They feel lost and isolated because there's something hunting them within that ship. The second movie then turns it into that was one alien, the first one. The second movie is now there's a clan of them and a very highly trained group of soldiers. It proves that these things are so vicious, it could decimate this entire group.
Yeah.
In one fell swoop. So that's what was really interesting about that. And then Alien 3 is sort of how one will react in the situation where there's urban chaos, the jail cell. The problem that I have with the game is that what could they possibly do narratively that isn't outlined in those movies? I mean, this is essentially retelling the story of Aliens, you know, the James Cameron film. And I don't understand how that even makes sense.
I don't think they're even interested in those things. And that's the sad part.
Well, we talked about this, I think, even at E3, which is, you know, it's weird that, you know, an alien is attacking me. I shoot it in the face with a shotgun and there's no effect of the acid splattering on me.
Yeah.
You know, there was a giant nuclear explosion where the reactor blows up at LV-426 that decimates or destroys this entire complex. You go there and there's a hole in the wall and it's like, oh yeah, see guys. And the funny thing is someone actually said in my preview for it, which they said that, oh, it wasn't a big explosion. Nothing really bad happened. This someone like took a screenshot of the game where it shows a mushroom cloud, kind of a big explosion. So it just seems like they're trying to shoehorn this narrative thing into something that will be iconic to people. You know, you get to go see these different locales that you've seen in the movies and all these characters that you know have connections to. It's just, to me, it's like, it seems like just a shoehorned in narrative structure, and the game, it looks kind of weird.
It looked pretty generic for being so specific,
right?
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But as long as, you know, when you die it goes game over, man, then I'll be happy.
Game over.
One of my first questions was when I interviewed the creative director was whether or not that harsh language is going to be a weapon in the game. Nice. Didn't get the joke. And I was like, really? You guys are doing an alien game?
God, whoa. So
didn't get the joke.
That's not really good. That's
but there's cargo loaders in it, so that's something.
You know what? On a quick divergent theme before we head to the music break, has anybody seen the trailer for Attack the Block?
No.
Okay, there you go.
New dance video?
No. You got to go see this. You got to check out the trailer for Attack the Block. It is the Hot Fuzz guys doing aliens landing in the blocks in London.
Oh, great.
And
that sounds awesome.
It's ridiculously awesome looking. It is absolutely... It's Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, but with aliens going into, you know, like working class London.
Just as long as it's not Paul.
Well, yeah. Well, we will keep our fingers crossed. Yeah. How about that? We'll take a little break, and while we do, we will hook you up with some very good house music from the 44th and Filth label. This is Yug featuring Sojay with Doin'. Doin from Yug featuring Sojay. Thank you very much, 44th and Filth. And as I was saying earlier, Andy Reid's going to be down here joining us the second week in July. Looking forward to seeing you then, Andy. All right, on to the news. Much apologies. We had tons of games to talk about. So we will come back and do some of this E3, like, navel gazing next week. Not too much navel gazing, but like some of the stuff, like McPaddles had a really good comment I wanted to get to. Strange James had one. So, guys, we will, I have them right here. Mm-hmm. We will just carry them over to next week. But this week, we have to talk about this Duke Nukem fiasco. So, I'm turning it over for news to Mr. Zav Damatos.
Thank you. Thank you for pronouncing my name correctly.
Zav Damatos. For all the news that matters. No? All right. I'm trying.
All right. So, without going to super specifics, there was a PR company that was dealing with the Duke Nukem Forever release that ended up writing a tweet saying that they were going to have to look into future releases and the venomous attitude that people had towards the reviews to decide whether or not certain outlets would be getting copies of games in the future. And this led to that tweet being deleted, and then that company apologized. 2K has since publicly stated that they are no longer affiliated with that PR company. So we don't really want to talk about that. What I think the conversation is here, as people who work in this industry, is this idea of PR deciding to hold the press hostage in these situations. Russ Frushstick from MTV had a great article just yesterday, I believe, about it is well within the rights of any PR company to deny service or deny us access to their games. They can do that if they'd like, if they wish, which is true. But this idea of the thing that bothered me the most about this Duke Nukem situation, which is what I was talking to Garnet about earlier, is that a lot of the reviews that were referenced seem to have been from guys who were doing this for free, guys who own their own websites that do this because they enjoy it and they love it. And it seems to me that it's like PR is trying to train people who want to try to get paid for this in the industry to scare them into a situation to think that they cannot be honest with their audience. That pisses me off because above all else, I am writing my reviews and previews for the audience, the people who have to make these decisions later on, to inform them. Nothing about, you know, my friendships with people throughout the industry at developers or PR companies has nothing to do with how I perceive a game or my experience. If I don't have a good experience, I'll tell you I didn't have a good experience. And that's why I think it's funny when I read reviews for Duke Nukem specifically and the comments are, oh, you know, they wanted more hits. They get paid by hits. This is the thing that I love. They get paid for every hit that you get. Every time you click, they get 10 cents in their bank account. That's bullshit. You know what I mean? I think that that is such a stupid way of just trying to undermine what essentially is a service that we're trying to provide to our audience. Like, you do TRS and you do your clever games for your audience. You're not doing it to impress the people at the PR company or to try to get free games. I mean, I don't give a shit about getting free games. If you don't want to send me a copy of your game, that's fine. I'll, you know, perfectly happy buying it to do a review. It just drives me up the fucking wall when a company tries to say, you know what, because we don't agree with you, because we, you know, we have a lot of money at stake, we are just going to say to you that we are not going to support anything that you do. And if you'd like to get games from us, well, you have to be a little nicer to us. Make a better fucking game.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of facets to this argument. You know, not only is it about, you know, being honest with your audience, but it's also about who your audience is. And I think PR companies, a lot of time, not only is it just, are you saying good things or bad things? It's like, how many people are you saying that good or bad thing to? I think factors in far more than what your actual opinion is. It's like, who's that opinion going out to? I think that that's probably like the bigger issue for games journalism at large, that you have, you know, a couple of big companies that are getting all of the exclusives or all of the free games. And so sometimes when you get smaller companies, like some of the ones that did some of these reviews, and they get lashed out at, it just kind of leaves a sour taste in all the other journalists' mouths about their feelings for PR and how difficult it is to make inroads with video game PR people if you're up and coming in the video games business.
We're in an interesting business, and this is why I oftentimes will reference my argument. I usually reference about why I don't picture this, what most of us do as journalism, is that, you know, we're covering an entertainment media, and the publishers hold the story. They hold every single
They're
piece
the gatekeeper.
Of it. They have the media, yeah. They have the access to the people who are making the games, and they have the access to the final copies and the final thing at the end of it all, other than when it goes to retail and we can go buy it. Now, if you want to play in the world, if you want to talk about all the games we've talked about for the last hour and a half, then you have to have a relationship with these folks.
Right.
Now, here's the other side of it. Is the blacklisting goes on, and it's just, I mean, I think the problem here was that no publisher wants to be seen to their audience as the evil corporate overlords. They don't want to be seen as the bad guys who blacklisted so-and-so because they didn't like this game. So that, you know, that's one of the reasons they have third-party PR, is that gives them a layer of separation. And in this case, they obviously, and I think maybe overreacted a little bit in completely axing their contract. I mean, keep in mind, this PR company has been doing business with them for quite a while.
Right.
And it just sort of disregards all the hard work they put in up to this point for, you know, one stupid 140-character tweet. I say stupid shit all the time. I mean, by that right, I'd be dead a long time ago.
And I think the perception from the PR company's perspective was that it went over the line from your opinion on the game to sort of reveling in ripping it down.
So
that does not justify the behavior. That does not justify the retort to say, well, guess what? I'm going to close the pearly gates on you. But I think that's the context through which that happened, was that I think the attempt to express was more based in, you know what, if you guys can't be adults about reviewing the game, then maybe you shouldn't be allowed to review the game. Now, again, I'm not defending that position. I just think that's more the framework of where it was coming into, not just like, hey, we got a blacklist and you're on it.
The problem is that PR, since they are the gatekeepers, we factor in as a cog in their wheel. And because they are controlling the marketing, the advertising spend, and all this other stuff, and how, you know, information is put out, when that cog starts to get shaky, when we start to give our opinions on that, this comes up sometimes. And this isn't all PR companies. There are plenty of great people in this industry in PR that I'm good friends with. But there are situations where blacklisting does happen because they think, oh, you're being unfair or you're being venomous, so we're just going to stop dealing with you.
Well, there's a lot of people out there writing reviews that just don't know how to write a review, that say things out of emotion, that don't base it in the gameplay or the mechanics or the visuals, that just based it purely on, like, oh, I just didn't like it. I mean, look at all the Brink reviews that came out that I thought were just utter crap. Because I personally really liked that game, but there was a lot of really bad reviews that I thought were really poorly written. And I think, you know, for fans of Duke Nukem, they probably say the same thing about this game, that there was a lot of really badly written reviews. Like, I read some reviews on it that I thought were really well done, that pointed out the bad things in the way that they should have been pointed out, you know, in the context of the whole franchise. And then there were some reviews that were just spiteful, you know?
I think we've drifted a little here. What are we trying to talk about?
Let me try to frame this conversation, because it's something that I've thought about a lot. And I'm probably going to fumble around because I don't know exactly how I feel about it, but I want to bring it up for discussion. And that is, a lot of people talk about quote unquote games journalism, and a lot of people talk about sort of having high standards in that area. And it's something I respect. I think there are very few people who actually are games journalists. I don't consider myself one. Mm-hmm. I'm a pundit and, you know, a reviewer and all those things. But I never understand getting to the point of sort of comparing it to, for example, political journalism. Because these are such wildly different kinds of things. I mean, basically, as Zev so eloquently mentioned, we provide a service to try to help people make purchasing decisions. And I think you'd have to be an idiot not to be able to glean some sort of help over the vast wide array of all the different voices coming at you about any product. Mm-hmm. And I'd never understand the cynicism and distrust that is comparable to the political arena. Like, I get having sort of a distrust of your leaders or a healthy curiosity and healthy distrust of what information might be disseminated to you from people that are making real important decisions in your life. But just whether or not I should buy a particular game, whether a game is an 8 or a 7 or a 6,
yeah,
like I don't get that level of
Do you think I'm a stuck-up bastard?
What?
Do you think I'm a stuck-up bastard? Because I really don't like to think of myself as, like, being a purchasing decision helper. I can honestly tell you that I never once, when I'm critiquing a game, think for a moment about, am I trying to, would I buy this or would I not buy this? Because that's, I'm not there.
I agree with you. I don't think about that.
Remember, like,
when
that
I'm
whole
doing
argument,
my job.
Like, yeah, would, not, I, like that whole argument, would that, I pay $200 for flour? Well, I mean, I guess it depends on my situation, but, like, that's something that everybody has to decide for themselves.
When people seek us out, what they're looking for is, I want to be in on the discussion about something that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
This is my hobby, and I want to be involved in what's going on around it.
So I do
I want to know whether or not something is worth my time or money or whatever it is for them. They want to know, like, okay, we have access.
Yeah.
So I want to be involved in that conversation and know whether or not I should be interested in that.
See,
thing.
I guess part of it is that like, so circling back here a little bit to the blacklisting thing, is that the thought never crosses my mind of it mattering one way or the other, because I can't ever compromise what I would say, because I'm only my opinion. Like, I always have to be true to that, whether it's good, bad, ugly, stupid, bad jokes, whatever it is. Like the Garnet Lee opinion is the Garnet Lee opinion, and I can't compromise that in any way, regardless of what the situation is. And if that means that, you know, if that means I wound up getting one day blacklisted by somebody for something, that's fine. But what I've always tried to do with everybody I've worked with is be like, well, you know, here's me, here's who I am. You know how, you have my telephone number, you know how to get a hold of me. I'll always be upfront with you about what my opinion is about things. I'll let you know how things are going to go or where I am or what I'm thinking, but I can't change that.
Is there even an issue here? Like, why, when I look at the official PlayStation magazine and I see that it tends to like PlayStation games, what does that fucking matter?
It doesn't.
Right?
Exactly.
I think reasonable person can disseminate that information based on the given data.
I think there might have been a miscommunication. I'm not necessarily saying that our function is to be this sort of like buyer's guide for people. I just think it's our job to inform them honestly. That's always been the thing that drives me a little bit crazy about when I read the thing that I find the hardest of the hardcore. Some people like to read reviews because they need validation. And if you don't validate
Many
their opinion,
do.
Yes. If you don't validate their opinion, it's because you didn't get it. It's because you got paid off. It's because this or that. I think it's fucking hilarious that everyone who criticizes any industry thinks that it's so easy for us to be very corrupted, they got free games, so that means they love the games. It's like, if you think that it's so easy for people to be corrupted, you're basically saying that if you were in this situation, you would very easily change your own personal opinion because someone gave you something for free. Oh, you don't? That's because it doesn't fucking happen that way. That's what drives me crazy about it.
Well,
he's very adamant about this.
My position is slightly different from that, and I agree with what you're saying fundamentally, but I think that genuinely nobody, even if their opinion has been changed by whatever, mm-hmm. no one thinks that their opinion was changed by that. No one, because my best friend is Steven Spielberg and I walked out of Steven Spielberg's movie and I go, I don't really want to say bad things about my best friend Steven Spielberg.
Right.
Nobody is conscious of that. It just happens. But you, as the disseminator of that information, can look at that source, and the internet gives you myriad sources, and you're able to make that, weigh those things on your own. Right. And
I don't know. I guess I hope that by having good and ordinary relationships with these people, that if I was Steven Spielberg's friend, that I'd walk out and I'd say, you know what, Steve? Yeah, that wasn't your best work. Sorry, man. It's not happening.
Yeah,
and when people tell you that it's not your best work, they're going to tell you that because of this and this and this, and you've done some good stuff, and this just ain't it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, bud.
But that's different than what happened in this specific situation. Right. Like, going back to the whole reason we're having this, is because there was a lot of reviews out there that, and the reason why he, you know,
so
the guy, so the PR company acted out the way he did.
Here are some of them.
Back. Yeah, go ahead.
Nobody should think kindly of such a miserable, lifeless, grotesque little game. Most adults will roll their eyes or perhaps sneer in disgust at the game's attempts at humor, and it reeks of the developers trying too hard. Something that, as every teenager will tell you, is totally uncool, bro. Given its development history, you might be inclined to grab a copy of this train wreck. Avoid the temptation. Like,
That's just mean spirited. It's like there's a difference between, like I said, not liking the game and saying being specific about what you don't like about it and writing that.
That's a surface reaction. Yeah. But I would tend to I would also make an argument that it's also indicative of the relative lack of sophistication overall in a lot of the things that we as game journalists or game media members write, and attempts to still be like we have this line, we're trying to be cool, we're trying to have these like conversations with the audience like we're hanging out with them, and at the same time we're trying to establish a critical voice, and those two ideals don't mesh that well all the time, and you kind of have to be committed. And then writing with a critical voice, then sometimes you see these like people take it the other end where it's like every sentence is 25 words long, all of like 7 syllables. You know, that's not the answer either. That's just it's tough to find those voices, and maybe in some cases these are just people's voices.
I don't think being critical equals being objective. I don't think I think a lot of people make that mistake. I think the idea that, you know, being cynical and being and coming at things with criticisms already loaded into your gun does not equal being unswayed by whatever those things are, you know, right. It's like the pendulum can swing the other direction just as harmful.
That's why I am constantly saying, divorce yourself of what your expectation was for the game and what did you think of just playing that game specifically at that point in time.
Yeah.
And one thing that we don't do at Shaq News that's very important to me.
Oh, he's gonna blow our
horn. I'm gonna blow the secret out of the water here.
Auto fellatio.
When we talk about when we review games, we never talk about it in a technical way. We never talk about, unless it's something that's very very obvious, but it's always about the experience. And this is what was a little funny about people saying you should have reviewed the PC version because it's a much better game. The experience is the same. The difference is the technical side of it. And I think that, I mean, if our reviewer didn't enjoy that game and that experience, it's good. It doesn't matter what platform that he plays it on if it's the same experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In this particular case, Andrew's right. There was a lot of venom that's been thrown around. And I think, you know, in some cases, it was people thought it would be a great idea to decide to, you know, show this game what they really thought because it's been in this cycle for so long. And, you know, people may accidentally go buy this thing that's a giant piece of shit. I don't think it's a giant piece of shit. I think the game just doesn't have a lot of entertainment value for me personally.
All right. This doesn't have any entertainment value anymore. Let's move on to the news.
All right. Well,
we got plenty of entertainment value out of that, I think. Rather than beat a dead horse.
I just want to say one last thing real quick is that there's also a distinction, lest we get too far down this road, between PR and advertising dollars.
Yeah.
And there's two completely different issues, the latter of which we are not talking about here right now.
Right.
Okay, go
ahead. Let's move on to some news.
Right? I'm not really sure what you meant, but okay.
Like the whole Jeff Gerstmann situation.
That's a completely different
situation.
Yeah. You mean where a publisher says, I'm not going to put money with your website anymore unless you give me a better grade.
Right.
Yeah.
That's different than I do think there's a distinction between that and access and all those things, because those things are playing in two different worlds. But mm-hmm. Go ahead.
All right. So moving on to some news.
Newsy news.
This came out last week. Arrests have been made in the PlayStation Network hack case. Spanish police have arrested 3 people in connection to the PlayStation Network attacks. They were the local leaders of the anonymous attack group or hacking group. And one suspect had a computer server in his apartment that police say was used to attack the PlayStation store, including banks, energy companies, government sites in Spain, Egypt, Algeria, Libya, a bunch of different stuff. They found 3 suspects, all of which were in Spain. They say that they found them because of over 2 million lines of chat dialogue that they went through and actually found these suspects. So this isn't obviously over, so we'll hear more about that as it develops. EA, did anyone read about Origin? EA's new, rebranded mm-hmm. their EA store, and now it's Origin. And there was some confusion yesterday about whether or not they pulled Crysis 2 from Steam because they wanted to make EA games exclusive on their own platform. Apparently, that wasn't the case for Crytek. Crytek actually had to pull it because of the changes made in how Steam delivers digital download DLC. Sorry. So they had to, since they had other agreements with other companies and they changed the way the agreement worked at Steam, they ended up having to pull the game off of the server. If you own the game already on Steam, you actually could still play it, but the game is no longer available to be purchased there. But a few other things have come out of this, which is that the new Alice Madness Returns is going to be exclusive on EA's Origin until June 17th. Also, Star Wars Knights of the Old... Sorry, Star Wars... What is it? The Old Republic. Is only going to be available on EA's Origin site. This is... EA is trying to create a platform. The quote was that we are going to continue to be great partners with our retail channels as they evolve their business models. But at the same time, when you talk about platform exclusives like Halo or Uncharted, EA is going to have some of their own platform exclusives for the PC. So it's going to be interesting to see, especially with a game like Old Republic, where you're trying to compete in a very competitive market with a World of Warcraft, making the game only available on one digital service. It'll be interesting to see how it works for
them. How many digital services is World of Warcraft available on?
Well, I mean, that's a little different because this is the sort of bar that's already been set. The game was sold at retail and also sold digitally. And it came out in 2004 where digital distribution wasn't really in its heyday. It came out, I think, just after Half-Life 2. And Steam, if you remember, was not very good back in those days.
I just don't think, I don't know. I don't think it'll be as big a deal for an MMO because it's sort of like you're buying an online service anyway. Mm-hmm. So logging into a specific website to get it, it doesn't seem to me as big a deal. I don't think you browse Steam looking for MMOs to buy, but maybe I could be wrong.
I think the environment has changed so much.
They just added free to play to Steam. I think that really this is Electronic Arts trying to get the reins back on their digital storefront, doing it through what they hope is the power of their titles, and banking on out of the four of us. Three of us not giving a shit whether we bought it through Steam or through Origin because we just wanted to buy the game digitally. And it's not going to bother me that I'm going to have to deal with that. And I'm not necessarily convinced that Steam is that vulnerable. I think Steam is Steam's proven like a great platform and a great user experience, and people have their friends there, and it's much more likely that they turn around and look at that missing title and be like, well, why the hell isn't your game on our service? Mm. Like, you want to make your own platform? And then I don't even know why necessarily they so badly EA wants to get that back. I think that there's always been a good retail relationship where, you know, a publisher can make a game and distribute it. And if you have distributors, then you know you have that, again, same reason you have a PR firm to help handle your stuff, you have that degree of separation. You're not handling that final customer transaction. You have another person handling that, so you don't have to worry about all of those issues.
Right. Moving on to New York. Some sad news out of New York is that THQ has closed Chaos Studios, the developer of Homefront, which was originally established by a group of people who created a mod for, was it Battlefield 1942?
Yes. Yeah. No, original Battlefield.
Original Battlefield.
Desert Combat. Desert Combat, guys. It's the Desert Combat, guys.
So Chaos has been shut down, and operations are being transferred over to THQ Montreal, who will take over creative management for the Homefront franchise. Also being shuttered is Digital Warrington out of the UK, which was the developer of Red Faction Battlegrounds, the downloadable game that came out before Armageddon was released.
That was quick.
But also in New York, a new studio is being established by Avalanche, developers of Just Cause 2. They announced plans to open a AAA dev studio in New York this fall that will focus on creating a next-generation new IP for PC, consoles, and handhelds.
You hear that, Jeff? Community manager job. Hmm. Your favorite games.
Yeah. Well, why would they even open that studio?
Why? What do you mean, why?
Just cause.
Just cause. today it was revealed that Batman Arkham City, when it comes out on PC, is going to be a Games for Windows Live game. Also revealed the other day by Best Buy, of all places, is that you'll be able to play as Robin in some challenge maps.
Yeah, so the question is, which Robin is it? I saw on the news story I looked at, had the Frank Quitely drawing of Robin, which is very much an 8-year-old boy. Are we going to...
I haven't seen Rocksteady or Warner Brothers release anything about Robin. As far as I know, they haven't even addressed the fact that Best Buy accidentally, not so accidentally,
it's because it's not in their PR plan yet.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I think we'll see more about him soon. But
I'm just curious what the design looks like, because it looks very Catwoman design is very Jim Lee. It's a very Jim Lee universe. Is it going to be that Jim Lee Robin?
I would say that's probably a safe bet.
Yep.
And it's not
and I haven't seen anything, but I would say it's probably a safe
bet. Not out of the realm of possibility. The first game on the PlayStation 3 had Joker as a playable character in challenge maps, and then also there's two playable characters in the actual game that's coming out.
Yeah, we asked him that same question. They stoned us when we asked them about that, too.
You got stoned when you asked the person?
Yeah, they announced a Joker Carnival challenge map.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
With the same thing with Robin.
Oh,
all right. The same story.
Some sad story for all you Rage fans. It was actually delayed. Supposed to come out in September, now being pushed to October 4th.
Oh, October's getting busy, yo.
October 4th in North America, October 7th in Europe. The problem is, the funny thing about this story is that they never actually made the official announcement. They just changed the date on their official website. And everyone's like, wait a minute, what? What happened? Originally, about, I think back at QuakeCon last year, they said it was coming out September 15th. Games have been pushed back a month. So
it's release.
It's because you can carry infinite weapons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's going to take them a little longer to get those last few infinite weapons in there.
Those in. And Call of Duty Black Ops. Speaking of leaks from retail partners, yesterday, Call of Duty Black Ops, there was a leak on a flyer for GameStop that said that there was going to be a new DLC pack coming out in June. Then very quickly, Activision today released, yes, they released the information that a new map pack is coming out for Call of Duty Black Ops. We are all dumbfounded by surprise that they're releasing more DLC
for the best-selling game.
They might do one more before the next game comes out, possibly.
I think it's the last one.
I think it's the last one.
Yeah,
how many
did they do for the last
one? Even though the other DLC packs were top sellers for Xbox Live history, the top sellers.
They quickly start to, like, this is the whole reason that they've created Elite, which is because they see that people start dropping off in terms of the DLC that's coming out. So,
well, and speaking of that, Elite, I mean, they've got to stabilize the code base sometime to do their beta test as well, right? Because they've got 2 million signups already for their beta test and didn't even start for another month. Good gravy.
Good gravy.
Good gravy.
The pack is called Annihilation. It includes 4 maps and 1 zombie map as well, just like the last pack. Comes out on June 28th for the Xbox 360. They haven't announced when the PC and PS3 version is going to come out, but if it's going to be anything like the last 2 maps, it'll be exactly 1 month later. And no price was established for it either.
Shock. It'll be the usual.
Shock and awe.
It'll be the usual.
Yeah, it'll be $15. It was interesting, though, that the Treyarch studio head, Mark, they may have said that the zombies map is actually, they're introducing a new style of gameplay into the zombies experience.
And did he say what that was?
No, of course not.
Of course not.
It's innovative, and it'll give the zombie
fans...
You
play as the zombie.
I don't know.
Hitting.
That's all he said, an innovative style of gameplay.
I actually really, of the... multiplayer modes that are out there, I really actually do enjoy zombie house protection or whatever you would call that thing. It's fun.
Gears of War 3 is a lot like now, Horde mode.
They
changed it to be a lot like that now.
Well, and that new mode they showed us at E3 of Spec Ops, the survival mode. Did you try that out?
No.
It was really fun.
Was it? So
there was dogs with C4 strapped to them coming at you.
What?
Yeah, I played that shit.
In Modern Warfare?
Modern Warfare 3.
I hate the fucking dogs.
Now you're going to hate them more because they got C4, motherfucker.
Yeah. Who would do that to a dog? What kind of animal? Oh. What kind of fucking animal? Strap C4 to a dog.
Rated M for mature.
All I know is... I'm not going to say it. There was going to be a joke about playing quarterback in the NFL.
Okay. Last piece of news.
Terrible.
Kinect for Windows SDK is now available. Of course, people have been using the Kinect system on their PCs and throwing up a ton of YouTube videos of really cool shit that they've been able to do. Now Microsoft has released their own drivers, API, device interface for people to use for free on Microsoft's research website. It doesn't work exactly the same way that I think people are actually functioning it or using the system now, but it gives a lot of people some really good idea of what they can create. Their whole big thing with this and Kinect Labs is to see how creative the community can be with their tool set so they could try to add it into their games later. And available right now for free. For I think it's like 100 megabytes.
Nice.
100
cheap.
Megabytes.
100 megabytes. Cheap.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's time to bring it home, and you know what that means. We're back with the finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Yeah. Ladies first, Andrea, finish it.
I'm so glad you said ladies first, because my finishing move is my female Commander Shepard kicks your male Commander Shepard's ass. And I say this because BioWare announced today that female Shepard will have her very own trailer for Mass Effect 3.
Sweet.
Female Shepard.
We were having a discussion during the break also over whether my female shepherd would kick her female shepherd's ass. I think mine's going to win. I'm pretty sure mine's going to win.
It wasn't a discussion. It was would too, would not. Would too, would not. ad nauseum.
Would not.
Whatever. It might have been like that a little bit. It might have been a little bit like that. Zav D'Amato's finish it.
I'm just getting over the flu, so I don't know if we were really articulate when we were talking about games, but if you want to read more about all the games that we saw at E3, make sure to go to Shaq News website. We have so much coverage for E3. Amazing videos done by Del Rio and Ryan.
Yep.
Check it all out. Go to ShaqNews.com and enjoy.
Did people even get... We should have mentioned it last week that we did a Weekend Confirmed video every day.
Yes, we did.
So people should check that out if they like this show.
They should.
Those turned out pretty well, actually. Yeah. I was pretty happy with them. Just, I mean, we could come some place, come ways with the lighting and stuff, but we're getting better. We're getting better.
Awesome stuff.
You like them, we'll do more of them. If you don't watch them, then there won't be any more, and that's easy, too. It's an easy choice for us to make. All right, Mr. Kanata has a very official-looking envelope in front of him.
You know I'm a fan of the digital fun. Video games, huge fan. I don't not love the digital stuff, but as I get older, I get more appreciative of the analog as well. You know my love of board games. You know my love of books. And it's interesting that I got a handwritten letter from a listener of our show.
Wow.
And there was something wonderfully special about getting that instead of an email. It's from Anchorage, Alaska. And the viewer's name is Kyle. And get this. He and his buddies started a letter-writing club.
What?
Isn't that cool?
That's really cool, Kyle.
Yeah, and he just wrote in to say that he appreciates the show, and he tried to shoot, you know, they're just writing to people once a week, I guess, that they like, and they're handwriting letters to kind of, like, just get in touch with that.
Is that a hand-drawn envelope?
Yeah, he goes, I tried to choose something fancy pants for writing old college and high school friends. I may have come across as a little over the top, but no big deal. Anyway, I think it's cool. I think getting back
Kyle
in touch
Kyle
with
has
stuff,
very cool penmanship, by the way.
Yeah. I think sometimes getting back in touch with that analog style can be very, very nourishing for the soul.
Nice.
Yeah. And I appreciated it.
Mine is the land rush into empires and allies has proven not what I hoped it would, and that is that even with the Command and Conquer guys in there, it's still just another fucking Zynga click-o-rama. Like, come on, folks. If you're making it, like, when are we going to, is it even going to happen? Like, are Facebook games just going to continue to be these very socially engineered, get you to come back and click more and decide between, I mean, all of these games do the same thing. You're either marketing the game for them to get more people to play, or you're spending money to play a little longer than you had to play. There's so thin as far as things you actually do. And I really was optimistic that Empires and Allies was going to be different. I'm going to stick with it a little longer, but I've just gotten like into the battling and stuff. And it's still, there's just still so much of the core structure that is the rote social bring me back and get me working for Zynga. I'm either working for Zynga by marketing the game to my friends, or I'm working for Zynga by paying them to play it a little longer. Guys, there's more to it than that. Make great games and entertainment. Facebook could be a really exciting and interesting part of the game platforms that we play on. It's something we're all in tune and touch with every day. But this kind of crap is going to burn us all through it and be disgusted with it before we know what happened.
Way to end on a bright note.
How are the power-ups?
Zing!
The power-up right now is that we are done. You can watch Andrea on... I just want you to be on. I don't know. We can watch Andrea on Clever TV, which is a YouTube. Give me the full address.
Clever Games. It's youtube.com/clevergames with the double V.
Double V.
Yes. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Andrea Renee.
There you go. And Mr. Kanata, of course, daily on The Totally Rad Show.
Yeah, you're going to want to definitely watch our Green Lantern review before you go see that movie that came out today. Well, it'll be yesterday for people listening to this right when we release it. But
yeah.
And we got more big movies coming out next week. We got a Cars 2 review that you'll see, and Transformers coming soon. So,
and folks, those who ask all the time, we definitely have plans to get Alex and Danny in here. We know we want to do it. They want to do it. We just haven't done it.
Our show
we're going to do it.
So, yeah.
It's going to happen. And, of course, Zav D'Amatos and myself, you can always catch every day of the week on ShaqNews.com. It's awesome. Check it out on your game flap.
So good.
Yay! You're going to come around.
I'll throw you one. There you go, everybody. Thanks very much for joining us. This is Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop
We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.